You're listening to the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. FanDuel Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the NBA. We have these fun little Tuesday, Friday player performance stuff. We have same game parlays. We have picks for me sometimes and boosts and all kinds of fun things. Get ready in the playoffs. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today to get in on the action. And by the way, The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit theringer.com/RG to learn more. Listen to the end of this episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus, president select states. Game problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Coming up, an absolutely incredible day for TV watching in sports.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Wolwig Naturell, 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent, zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL, 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 €. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
It's all next. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. I have a new Rewatchables coming for you on Monday night. We did a movie from the late 90s that's a very light, fluffy movie that you'll probably be surprised we did, but it was a request by Joanna Robinson, who came in to LA for a couple months and did a bunch of great stuff with us. So I let her pick a Rewatchables, and it's a good one. And I was excited she picked the one she picked. I'm not going to tell you what it is. That's coming up. Prestige TV is not covering The Last of Us, but we will be covering it on the House of R podcast and on The Midnight Boys as well in the Ringerverse. So you can check out both of those. Celtic City, episode 7, which basically tackles everything after Bird with the 90s, which was really grim. And I was living in Boston for a lot of it, but there's no basketball tomorrow night. So there's no better chance to catch up with Celtic City. It's on HBO 9 p.m. or you can catch up on all the episodes so far on Max. Coming up on this podcast, Rasil and I, we recorded right after Rory McIlroy won the Masters, and we thought it was going to be an NBA podcast, but we ended up talking about golf for the first 30 minutes. Then we went right into Game 82, Clips Warriors, all the playoff matchups, things we've noticed, some award stuff we're trying to figure out. And it's a really good podcast. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we are recording. It is 4:30 Pacific time. Just watched the playoff hole of the Masters. We're going to talk a lot of basketball later, but that was one of the most emotional Masters of all time. And I was trying to think, Rosillo, how many times have you seen a guy just pull the monkey off his back like that in your lifetime that you can remember? Because we've had different versions of it, right? Like we had LeBron in 2016, like bringing Cleveland the title. You have John Elway in Denver in 97. There's just not a lot of those. I'm kind of choked up. I don't know what to do.
You sound a little off, but in a good way.
It was an emotional thing. I really thought not only did he blow it, it's one of those things that just hangs with you for the rest of your career and becomes one of the first things mentioned. That's the point where we were hitting some sort of crossroads with his career that I don't know if you can come back from. And the weight of that is almost, it's worse than actually just winning the Masters and getting that off. You know, because you have to live with that the rest of your life, basically.
Well, there was the Steve Young one. Remember when he won the Super Bowl and they actually were on the sideline? He was like, get the monkey off my back. And they were pretending they were right. Pulling a monkey off of his back because it was the post-Montana thing. But for golf, I'm not educated enough to run through all of this and tell you it brings back memories of Royal Troon or anything. But I know that I was always frustrated with golf fans because they'd be like, who do you root against? Like, what are you talking about? Root for good golf. I'm like, come on. There's going to be a couple guys you hate, you know, and Bryson, ironically, was kind of that guy. He filled this villain void. But then once you start to understand like how golfers feel about the sport, it's they don't really want anyone to have that moment. They really don't. Like, I think we enjoy it with the NBA and NFL. You're like, all right, good. I'm glad this guy choked because he's just not my favorite or backs up all my arguments.
Right.
As we get to Harden's awesome game later today. But
yeah.
Golfers just don't look at the sport that way. So you're absolutely right. I mean, if he ends up after the shot on 17, that's going to become something of Masters lore and then missing a putt, which looked like it really never had a chance on 18. It's not like it was the easiest putt. So it's not like he missed like a 2 or 3 footer and he's this choke artist. But
well, yeah, but it was the second shot on 18 that starts it, right? All he has to do is basically do what he did in the playoff hole. just get in, two putt, you win the Masters. He's in the trap. Then the hit out of the trap, just not quite close enough. He's got some work left. And that's, you know, that's golf. You need a four, he gets a five. And it seemed like Rose was hot in the betting market heading into the playoff. I think Rory was still favored, which I was really surprised by, because it's sometimes you watch those and you're like, how is this guy going to bounce back from this? But he bounced back. He had one of the great shots. I was thinking watching him today, he's like one of those basketball players that just gets hot and cold during the same game. You know, like Steph's a little bit like this, right? Like Steph today was like 1 for 5 in that Clipper game. And then all of a sudden he gets hot and he's just making everything for about 8 minutes. And that's a little what the roller coaster ride of Rory is like during these tournaments. He looks amazing, amazing, amazing. Then all of a sudden it falls back. Then he comes back the other way. And it's just the swings of golf. But I think the one thing that's different this time around is people wanted it so badly for him. You could feel it when we were on the course on Tuesday and Wednesday. Like he's clearly the most popular, you know, guy at the tournament now. He's taken the Tiger spot. But people, when you have that, when you have the emotion of all the people with you, they had that cut. Did you see that cutaway when the people on 18 who were just waiting, the scoreboard changed and reflected that his score had gone back, that he got in the double, and people were, you know, they're holding their hands in their heads, like something like really horrible had just happened. Like that's how badly everybody wanted it for him. So to come through with the pressure you have on yourself, but also all of these people you don't want to let down. Like I don't even know if there's a comparison to that. In basketball, you only have 18,000 people in the arena. This is like, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people all clustered around.
But that's the difference with the sport. Like basketball doesn't really give you a chance to sit there and mope. Like you kind of have to get back to it. I mean, most of the sports that we talk about all the time, there's very little time to sit there and kind of think about what you're going through. And for him to double one, and then you send me a text, you go, hey, we may have to lead with this if he falls apart. And it's almost this anticipation that he's going to fall apart because he's played so well the first three rounds. And then I look it up, I'm like, oh, but then he's like 4 under the next 10 holes. So I think it's kind of the sport. And even him, you know, going into the bunker, which you're right, is the bigger part of him missing the putt on 18, is that he actually kind of cracked a smile. He almost laughed at himself, like, you're going to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
So that there was some emotion that he was showing, I thought was a better sign. And I also think it helps probably playing 18 again all over to start the playoff, knowing like, okay, in my second shot, like I can't do that again. Right.
Yeah.
So I also think a lot of people in attendance too, based on, you know, what we're talking about, just the patrons, right? And their mindset of just wanting great things to happen and not terrible things to happen. It's a very positive group. There's also something too, which it's not, I shouldn't say selfish, but they want to see him complete the slam. So now he's the sixth guy to ever do it. You get to say that you were there in 25 at Augusta to see this. This is one of those, it's not Tiger's win, but it's one of the more memorable ones because he completes this career odyssey. Because if you think about the start of his career, it was like, oh my God, like what can't this guy do? We're going to talk about like, is he going to win 10 majors or something like that? I remember one of the debate shows at ESPN, like after he got married, it was like, well, he is married. It's like, so he's the only pro athlete who's married and this is why he's playing bad now all of a sudden. Like I understand time constraints can change as the non-married guy. Like I'm aware that your schedule is a little tighter, but it drove me crazy because he wasn't playing as well. Then there had to be a reason. It was like the only thing that anybody could point to. But he's never really been somebody that, I mean, his game itself is so enjoyable. I think he had a shot yesterday where I was watching. He's like 209 out, hits a 6-iron, and he smokes it into the air, too. He throws it like a dart, and you're like, how did you get it that far at that angle? So he's also probably as much fun as everybody or anyone on the tour, on top of everybody, rooting for somebody like him to complete this.
Yeah, there's a fearlessness to him with some of the shots he hits. He had a couple today where he's in front of trees and, you know, branches, all kinds of things. You're like, wait, is he going for this?
Well, there's the tower shot. There's the one on the left side on the drive where he gets a decent enough bounce. And then you're like, he's going to go through that or over it or what? You know, it's like the guy that never gives in to just go, let me save the hole. He's constantly thinking like, what's the best score can I get on? He plays the game the way no one should ever play it.
Yeah, we did a thing on my pod this week about the people that the gallery responded to the most because Tiger is basically done. And there was two different tournaments when Tiger played. It was basically the Tiger tournament was happening and the gallery is just following him. And then everybody else is playing. Now Tiger's gone. and Rory had become the guy, but Bryson was kind of, you know, gaining on it. And you could feel like those two had separated themselves from everybody else who was at the Masters, basically, with the fans, with the reactions, with the interest, everything. So then the fact that they're teamed up head to head for this last one, he double bogeys the first hole. And it just seemed like Bryson was going to run over him like a freight train. The opposite happens. Then it seems like he has it. Then all of a sudden he doesn't. Then Rose makes that crazy putt on 18, right as, like, you know, Rory's starting to maybe waver a tiny bit. But the five Masters I probably remember the most. And I don't remember golf the same way I remember basketball, where I can tell you like every single finals and, oh, in the Western finals this happened. But the Masters is the one that, you know, I've cared about the most my whole life. 86 Nicklaus, the Faldo Norman Masters, the Tiger in 2019. And then this one, I think we're at least four of the best. I'm sure there's a bunch of others, but those are the four that the Faldo Norman Master. I don't remember anybody not talking about that for like 4 days after. That just felt like this life altering. I've just never seen an athlete fall apart like that. Have you? It's no, the all time example of an athlete just completely falling apart.
It might be the only time I watched golf and cared during college, like that round.
Right.
Right. I mean, sports are hard to find a way to fit into the, we didn't have cable, I think, in our house for like 2 or 3 years too, on top of everything else. So it's like, all right, network TV, we don't have a ton of options. I just remember not being super dialed into 162 Red Sox games during college. And I just remember that afternoon, you know, it's a hungover, whatever. It's kind of a, is it muddy out or sunny out in Vermont? And then you realize, like, that really is one of those results you'll never forget where you were.
And Faldo just hugging him at the end, I don't ever remember anything like that either. Or Faldo felt worse about winning than probably anybody who's ever won a golf tournament. But, you know, God, we were talking about it, we were in there. You have team sports, you have a sport like the Clippers Warriors game that we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit later. And guys can affect the games. Draymond has that terrible put where he just should have gone up with it. He's trying to draw a foul and he screwed that play up. It's not the entire reason they lost. It's the thing you would think to. Golf, you're just by yourself. There's nobody else. There's no other reason you're going to win or lose. It's all you. You can't blame anybody. You're there with your thoughts. You're there with the momentum of it. You're there with, all of a sudden, I just don't feel great about this drive, but I have to hit it anyway. All these little moments that you're just battling. We were saying it's the only sport where you have to be like insanely competitive, but also completely calm. Is there any other sport like that? You have two emotions that are in direct. I was talking to my wife about this yesterday because I was explaining to her the whole Rory thing. And I was like, here's this sport where you just have these two things that don't make sense together. I have to be like a driven competitive maniac, but I also have to be completely calm at the worst possible moments of whatever I'm competing in, or the scariest or the hairiest, whatever you want to say. And that's why there's so few great golfers. You can't juggle that, you know?
No, it's a really great way of putting it, because I remember when the Sloan paper came out about there's no such thing as clutch. And I thought, okay, you know, there's all sorts of great basketball players. Like, if we want to just shave it down to down one, score tied, takes the shot. And then you look at the field goal makes versus field goal attempts. Like, your favorite players have awful stats on those. Like, there's all sorts of guys you can go through and be like, this guy's a killer. And then you're like, he's 2 for 30 in these situations, you know? And then if people hate one of those guys, they'll put that up and it's like, okay. I mean, it feels a little like politics. You'd be like, well, what's your guy doing? You know, what's your guy shooting in that situation? Which completely eliminates like the shot down three with 58 seconds left to go that ties it. It's like, that's a really clutch shot that matters, but it gets lost in the filtering with a lot of this stuff, right? So when that paper came out, it wasn't, like, I didn't do a, oh, nerds thing, you know, like some of the Sloan papers that had come out early on where it talked about like the waste of block shots because it wasn't always gaining the possession. But I just felt like, okay, if there's math that can't prove that this thing is true, can't we prove it in another way?
And that there doesn't are people, mean it's not true.
Right. Doesn't it, like, do we believe that there are people that are really tight in big spots? And the sport of golf, like, probably that shows up more than any other sport. You know, I don't know if it's somebody throwing an interception. I don't know if it's missing a free throw is the closest thing we have to a putt in the other sports. maybe it's an error, but you know, again, that's not going to happen. You're not going to have enough chances or the math would make any sense. So if we sit here and we agree that there are people that can choke that are just not comfortable, then we should be able to figure out a way. Maybe there isn't math that backs it up, but clearly there are people that are just a little bit more comfortable coming back from that. And golf presents like this reset where you open with a double for Rory and it's like, here we go.
Yeah.
And everybody sitting around watching just knows what would happen to them. Like, it's just going to fall apart. It's like, well, again, this is why these guys are the best in the world. There's nothing in the other sports. Like, I don't watch a receiver get open going, I can do that. I don't watch somebody get a shot off in basketball thinking, oh, that, you know, I would, like, we've accepted the gap. But yeah, with golf, because there are moments where even the worst golfer can have like this great shot and everybody like kids around or your friends are asking you like, what would you do on 18 right now? There's that disconnect where I don't know that we appreciate the mental reset hole to hole that these guys have to do to keep themselves in it and then ultimately win a major.
It's the biggest disconnect between fans and the people covering whatever sport you're going to pick and the people who actually do it. Like, even, did you see UFC last night?
I didn't.
So Lopez, who ends up losing, and he just seemed tight in the first couple rounds against Volk. And then as it went along in the last couple rounds, he kind of became who he was. And I, like, even stuff like that, you think, yeah, I can see it. I can see why you get tight. Like what was the most nervous you've ever been professionally doing anything? Not to compare us to athletes, but it's just an interesting,
wow,
interesting side track.
I probably the first time I ever called a baseball game, because it was the first time I was ever on the air. You know, the nervousness went away pretty quickly. I was definitely a little like tuned up to host them, but
well, how about when you were actually like established professionally, but there was still a moment where you had nerves?
The only thing I can think of is anchoring, when I had to anchor, because it wasn't something. It was, everybody told me I couldn't do it. So I was like, all right, you know.
What were you anchoring?
The combine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Cause then I actually had to like pay attention to all the cues and the directors and all this stuff. We're pretty close to being called absolute losers for comparing anchoring the combine to winning the Masters. But
I'm just talking about when you feel something that you feel like you can do, but then your heart starts pounding and the pressure comes in. Cause it could be anything, right? I remember the first time I hosted PTI.
Like, yeah, that's a good one.
10 right? minutes before, and you kind of sit down, you're getting in, and they hook you in. And I was just like, I'm fucking terrified. I'm like, literally, I'm terrified. And I wonder, like, in sports, you're not going to be like that because it's repetition and you've done so many things. But I'm sure there's moments where you're like, I'm good. I've done this a million kajillion times, but I'm still kind of terrified. And golf has to be the number one for that. I think tennis is a good one. Where if like, oh, I got to get this serve in, I'm down 30-40. I've got to get this first serve in. And that's just a different, once you start thinking about it, it's different. Basketball, like, I remember the scariest free throws. I've talked about this. Scariest free throws I ever saw were the Ray Allen Shaq game, when it looked like the game was over. And then Miami hit the three and they fouled Kawhi. And they were, San Antonio was up two. And they came to our side where our set was. And the crowd was just so loud and things were shaking and Kawhi was like, what, 22? He had to make these two free throws basically to clinch the game. And I was just watching going, this seems too hard. I don't know how he's going to make this. And he missed the first one. He made the second. But when you're in the vicinity of something like that and you can actually feel the pressure and you're just a bystander, it's unreal. I've been lucky enough to have been to a lot of different games and events where you've had that feeling. And it's just, there's no way you can't feel it, even if you're a player. Like, even like Clippers Rockets, when the Clippers collapsed in 2015, like, you could feel that in the arena. You could feel the energy shifting. So I'm sure you feel it in golf too, not to mention the nerves.
The benefit of all these other sports that we're talking about, for the most part, I mean, granted, not so much baseball, but you know, basketball, I think once you're out there and the physical part of the game takes over, you know, it's kind of a wake up. Like, even if you're right, nervous, like, it's those moments where you have time to think. In football, like, most people will tell you, they don't really feel like they're ready to go until they get absolutely blasted. And then once they get blasted, it's like, okay, you know, let's
yeah, banging play some ball bodies here. Probably helps with the nervous right. energy a little bit.
With golf, to sit there and to think and you have the guy in front of their group screwing up, so everybody's kind of delayed on 18. So now you have even more time to think. But Rory's great off the tee. You know, it's that second shot that we would have thought about a lot differently and would have remembered forever. Now we'll just forget it within a week,
right?
Which is great, which is good for Rory. But yeah, you always wonder, like, there's it's not the G League guy, but if you ask NBA players, be like, hey, was there somebody that you grew up with or somebody you played, and be like, you know, this guy was nasty. Like, he just gave it to us all the time. And you're like, oh, what happened to him? Like, oh, coach fucked him, transfer, and all these different things. You just wonder how many great golfers there are that can't handle any of this stuff. Like, if no one's around and they're just playing another guy, they're just as good as them. But once they're on this kind of platform, or, you know, at this level, I just imagine it's a massive separator that we don't even think about compared to the physical skills of these guys.
Well, my buddy Nathan Hubbard, who co-hosts the Fairway Rolling podcast with House, and his brother's on the tour, Mark, and he's talked about this on the podcast, so I'm not talking out of school. Mark got to like 63 one year, right? He was really close. And Nathan's dream as his brother is for him to crack it and make the Masters and have his brother be at the Masters. That's like the dream. And he's come close. And it's what you're talking about. He's got 95% of it, and he can't just put together the four straight days in a row or the nine holes when he really needs it in a big tournament or whatever the one thing you need to get in the top 10 to get some exemption. And it's always like one shot, one hole where it can't happen. And there's probably like dozens of guys like him, right? They're almost there, and it's just like, you know, I even look at the NBA. We some of the guys that we talk about that we like watching, and you think, like, is Cam Whitmore sitting on the Rockets bench going, if I just got playing time, I could potentially be an all-star? There's got to be like 50 guys in the league right that, right? Tari Eason's like, I'm a second team all defense guy. I just don't get enough minutes. So yeah, it's a razor thin margin. I think the one thing with Rory, and I just think in general, authenticity is making a big kind of comeback push in the mid 2020s. And we had this whole era with sports with the guys being told to fall down when they win a tennis tournament. And, you know, you could see cut to the coach waving for, what was it, Agassi? Go down after he won. And people trying to manipulate certain moments, and watching Rory just collapse and just be that overcome by winning, that to me was the most authentic thing we're probably going to see this year, I would guess.
Yeah, and you look, I give Rory a lot of credit for that, because, you know, there's just everything's covered, right? And this has been for a long time. And so, you know, there's certain athletes, like, I'll just use LeBron, for example. Like, I don't know how you could be famous this long and have everybody like you. Like, we could get into some of the criticisms of the personality, but, like, overall, I mean, come on, it's not that, you know, like, nobody thinks he's a dick.
Yeah, 23 really. Years. Yeah.
Right? But he comes up as junior high age awareness, and then cover Sports Illustrated mid-teens and the whole thing. And you can see with certain guys that they become famous. So now I'm not just on LeBron. I'm talking generally here. It's kind of like the high school kid you see like an interview on some recruiting site, and he's like, I'm all about winning. All I care about is winning. And it's like, you don't even care about it. You probably don't. Like, maybe some of you might, but you've all watched what is the highest approval response or explanation of yourself. So a lot of it feels disingenuous.
You're pandering to whatever you think people want to hear you say.
You know what you're supposed to say. You know, you're younger. You haven't really formed a ton of your own opinions on things. I mean, it's kind of impossible without more life experience to begin with. So it feels like so much of what we've seen over the last few years is rehearsed. And I'm not sure that I entirely blame athletes, especially a younger generation kind of coming up this way, feeling like there's no escape from any of it. Like, I'm constantly, everything I do is consumed in some way. So yeah, I may play it safe, or, you know, I guess it's kind of like the Russell Wilson thing, where I know exactly once he does the post game, he's going to thank the offensive line. He's going out of his way to go over this mental checkbox to just make it seem like he is the most team first dude that you've ever come across in your entire life. But then you lose that connection because you already know what's coming. You've heard the same shit for years and years and years. So there's got to be some kind of peace, especially for somebody like Rory later on, or any of these other guys that get a little bit older and you just feel totally comfortable. And it's great if your default is also like a likable personality on top of everything else.
Well, it's one of the reasons I think you and I have gravitated to Edwards, Anthony Edwards in basketball, because he's just authentic all the time. Almost.
Did you see?
Sometimes to his detriment.
Did you see what happened the other night with him?
Tell me.
The crowd was chanting child support when he was at the free throw line, and he started laughing.
Oh, my God. What crowd was that?
It was two nights ago, I think.
One of the latter. Oh, my God.
Like, well, I'm not like suggesting
he knows he's going to take shit for certain things, and he's pretty open about it. He'll talk about it. Yeah, that's one. Well, we'll see when he plays the Lakers. Yeah, but the now that Rory has this off his back, I don't know who the next guy is. I guess it's
Homa. Lamar. How about Homa's best round since the Masters last year?
Well, I was going to say Lamar, Josh Allen, maybe.
Oh,
James Harden. I'm trying to think of guys in different sports who monkey on the back guys. Lamar's not old enough yet. Like Rory, we had some real years here, and then we had U.S. Open last year, and we've had some suffering and time spent invested in him getting over the hump for forever. So it almost has to be Lamar's almost too young. We don't have enough losses yet. Josh Allen's too young. Like Harden would be an interesting one,
because I think there'd have to be
Harden wins four straight rounds.
Yeah, because like I don't think Allen's had bad playoff games. I think Lamar has had worse playoff games, but I think we all feel better about him as a quarterback now. Harden has a long resume of this stuff, and I'll admit, as I was watching it today, I mean, I know we're going to get into this game, but he was so good, and I've even joked. So I think there probably been a couple seasons going into where I was like, you think he's just be due to have kind of a baseline? Like, I need your floor to be higher than some of those just disastrous floor games from him. That might be the pick, because it would have to be. You know, there's some guys that I think of, like, look, I just think there's different ways to talk about different players and their failures and their successes. And sometimes we just want to label everyone that's failed a failure, and it's all for the exact same reasons. And it's like, okay, well, sometimes Josh Allen's going up against Patrick Mahomes, you know? So, like, are we going to shit on Josh Allen for it? I mean, I guess you will if you want to do that on TV, because I've seen it. But it has to be some of your own undoing as well. And Rory's had that.
Right.
So I think Harden's, like, if we want to spend more time on it, I mean, Embiid's probably not at top of mind right now because he's been hurt, but he's probably in the, but it's just not.
Here's a good example.
Harden's made the playoffs every year.
Ray Bourque is a good example, because anything that happened to him was not by his doing. He was fucking awesome on the Bruins. I loved the Bruins back then. And it really came down to, they were always like a third line center too short, or, you know, one defenseman short. They never spent quite enough money around him, but he was awesome. And nobody ever blamed Ray Bourque. So then when he finally went to Colorado and he won, and I was living in Boston back then, I think you were too, everyone went to bars to root for Colorado so that Ray Bourque could finally get one, because we loved Ray Bourque. We wanted him to get one. That he didn't have the kind of tragedy and the ups and downs of somebody like Rory. So I don't know. I don't know who it is. Rory was clearly the most popular. It could be Alcaraz. Well, Alcaraz has already won. I don't know. I don't know who it is.
I was still in Vermont, and I remember because he was traded, and he was teammates with one of my friends, and he told this awesome Ray Bourque story, which is pretty minor, so I'm not going to build it up too much, but it's too late. But like he was on the team. It's Ray fucking Bourque, you know.
Yeah.
One of the guys, one of the younger guys, was like, Ray, can I get your cell, or do you get a number? And he was like, why? So you and your buddies can call me drunk in the middle of the night.
That was his answer?
But he knew. He was like, it was in a funny way. He wasn't being a jerk about it.
That's great.
Because, you know, he knew, based on the way the guy was asking him, it was like, it was still this hockey god.
Yeah.
In the locker room with him, being like, hey, man, you know, like, maybe I'll get your number or something. And then he shot it down.
Ray Bourque was in one of the great authentic Boston sports moments ever, when he gave the jersey to Espo when they were retiring Esposito's jersey. And Ray Bourque was wearing number 7 because they had traded Esposito to the Rangers, and there was a little bit of bad blood. So then Bourque came in, and he was the rookie, and he was awesome. And then at some point in the 80s, they had Espo night, and Bork came in and took his jersey off, and he had the 77 underneath, and he just gave Espo his jersey. It's fucking amazing. Amazing sports moment.
You ever interview Esposito?
No, I've always heard he was kind of lit.
It was
letting it fly.
Yeah.
You had him on the radio show?
Yeah, back in the early days. I mean, we were thrilled. We're like, man, we get Esposito for 8 minutes. This is gonna fucking week is made.
Just like a crazy Italian guy.
But just the second he's on the air with you, it's just on. Yeah. He was great.
Let's take a break, and then we have a lot of basketball to hit, because today
nothing. A little Simmons Masters moment, fresh from Augusta. You got anything for us?
Well, I'll tell you this. On Wednesday, I split up with the group I was with, and I was with Nathan and I think Chang, and we just ended up on the fifth hole watching them putt, and it was Rory, it was Lowry, it was John Rahm, and it was Fleetwood. And in the practice round, you can kind of, like, you're just fucking around. You can basically hit with whoever. I think they let them decide a little bit. So the four of them were playing. They were all gambling, and they were clear they were buddies. And we were right there when they were all teeing off on the sixth hole, and we felt like Lowry and Rory were betting. So we were all excited, like, oh, I wonder what they're betting, like, and they're kind of keeping track. And just, they seem loose. And it was one of the reasons I picked Rory to win, because I was like, Rory seems loose. He's, like, betting with Lowry. This seems good. Fast forward to when he wins today. Lowry was one of the guys waiting for him, like almost like he was a family member. I don't know if you saw that. Rory comes off the course and he's hugging different things. He sees Lowry, like, huge long hug and like high fives, and then Fleetwood, same thing. And I was like, oh, those must be like, that's like his Ryder Cup crew, you know, all his dudes. But anyway, it stuck out because we had that moment on Wednesday. We were like, wow, Rory seems loose. This is a good sign, because coming off last summer, who knows? All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk a little Warriors clips and some playoffs and some all NBA. All right. Game of the day, game 82, which I think was a lot more fun last year. This year, we knew a lot of the matchups and the records, but we did have this incredible Clippers Warriors game that it's tough. Every time there's a great game, you want to do the game of the year. But I think that actually might have been the game of the year, because there were real stakes and both teams really wanted it. And I think both teams wanted the rest. I don't even think it was about the matchups as much as, can we get 5-6 days off here? The Warriors definitely wanted it because they have an older team, and the Clippers are playing this, you know, they have Kawhi Jenga, and the game was fascinating for a whole bunch of different reasons. The Clippers win. And I'm going to start here because I felt that way before the game. I think the Clippers are the second best team in the West.
Okay.
Counter. Any counter?
Well, the only thing that I would counter is just all the stuff that all of us would say about, okay, well, in the playoffs, like, are they a riskier bet than these other teams? But as far as who is playing the best basketball right now, they're the second best team in the West. So I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah.
Look, last 15 going into today, number one offense, number one defense. The Kawhi thing is real. March, April, he's playing 36 minutes a game. He's shooting it like crazy. Zoo is one of the most underrated players in the NBA. And on top of everything else, like, you can just see the difference against some of these teams that may want to go small, because I still think there's like three or four teams that would prefer to go small. OKC can do whatever they want. Houston actually wants to play big. Golden State definitely wants to play small. The Lakers definitely want to play small. And so now that you have this first round matchup 4-5, like, so it's not like they're going to be, you know, I don't know. I mean, some weird stuff would have to happen. And again, looking at the seeding of the whole thing. So it's not like they're just going to run through all these small teams, but if you want to go small against the Clippers, it's going to be a big problem, because Zoo is such a huge part of their offense. They trust him more, and he just beats the hell out of you.
Let's talk Zoo, because I think it ties into a bigger thing with the Clippers. I think he's going to be on the third team All NBA for me, and I'll make the case for it later. But I can't believe, and I've been watching him really carefully the last month, because it was jumping out at me during games. Started looking at the stats, started talking to some people, asking, like, am I crazy, or is Zubat's like incredibly important in this team? And is he kind of better than people realize? You watch the game today. He was awesome in that game. I mean, I don't know how many times he defended the rim against somebody and either thwarted a drive or changed somebody's direction on a drive, but it was between 15 and 20, not to mention the alley-oop stuff, not to mention the rebounds. And he plays. plays big minutes every game. And I think he's played 79 games this year. He's like 32, 33 minutes a game. And he doesn't get in foul trouble. So like the thing I was thinking with All-NBA was, I've had Jaren Jackson in there all year. And I'm just watching Zubats going, this guy plays all the time. He stays on the court. He's gotten better as the year goes along. And to me, like the guy that he really reminds me of is Gasol on the Grizzlies. That 2013, 14, 15 era Gasol. He's not the passer Gasol was, but his big, how he's always in the right positions with his hands up. Players on the other team are always afraid of him protecting the rim. He grabs, he's a better rebounder than Gasol was. And if you watch what the Warriors today, when they were posting up Zubats, the Warriors were reacting and sending a double every time. And the Clippers, when they need baskets sometimes, they run stuff through him so to set up the other guys. I think he's the third best center in basketball right now behind Towns and Jokic. Obviously, Jokic is number one, but I think he's third. I really do.
Well, if you want to run your offense through him, you can. You can trust him now to catch, depending on where you want to set him up, because you know we saw, I mean, there's a few different things, obviously, that happened in the length of an overtime game. But early on, it's like, let's make sure we get some touches and let's see how Golden State wants to defend this. And so if you double him, he'll get it right out and he can swing it. So you can trust him to do that. If you let him get deeper off of a drive, like Harden plays it brilliantly. I mean, the best thing Harden's ever done his entire career, I think, is off that high ball screen. And then yep. you have almost basically the big shadowing you. But with Zoo, he doesn't even need to necessarily roll off the high screen. He can be just in the dunker spot. And then that guy comes over to help on the Harden drive because Harden's just so good on that kind of stuff. And then Harden finds these passing lanes. That wraparound that he made going to his left side with his left hand, where it looked like the angle was completely shut off, is great. And if you run through the numbers, Golden State was forcing turnovers, really good on-ball defense. They got up 36-25, 10-52 the second quarter. They bring Zoo back in and they close the half 35-22. There's all sorts of numbers that just point to his impact. And then if you
it's gotten to the point where they you almost feel like they have to hold on when he's out. That's how I felt in the fourth quarter. You have these Ben Simmons minutes and you're like, they just got to make sure they don't fall down eight before Zubac comes in. Like that's how important he's become for them. And all the Clipper fans, that's all they talk about. They think he's like the most underrated guy in the league. Like they're like Scientologists.
I agree with them.
there was this Ben Simmons stretch.
If you could come speak, Bill, at our Zubac thing.
is there a Zubac festival?
We have a medal for you.
There was a Ben Simmons stretch where the Warriors were like, you know what, fuck this, we're going zone. Ben Simmons, knock yourself out at the foul line, try to make some plays. And it was brutal, like legit brutal. And then he finally made one pass and got an assist, but I don't know if that's sustainable for them in the playoffs, any Ben Simmons minutes. Now, they didn't have Batum today, and I think Batum is really important for them. And actually, they can, as crazy as it sounds against the right team, even go super small with him and maybe not play Ben Simmons at all. I just think the way Kawhi's playing, you mentioned that, was he 24-7 since the All-Star break and getting shots, getting to his spots. Defensively, he's starting to look not 100% like San Antonio Kawhi, but he's like, you know, it's reminiscent. He can turn it on. Yeah,
I don't know that it's ever going to be that again. So no. I think you're being totally fair about that because you're just talking about
he's 33. Like
a level of intensity. Maybe they don't even want him to play that intensely. But you're right on the Simmons thing. I'm glad you brought up Batum not being available because I was thinking the exact same thing. They go zone. It was kind of working, except they weren't corralling the basketball. So they're giving up offensive rebounds, which is one of the problems of the zone anyway, especially if you're small. And Simmons just doesn't really, I mean, this isn't breaking news, but
he's not playable.
When he has to think about what he's doing, it's over. So he was good enough on tapping a couple balls out. He did have that one assist, but he had two other passes on the right side where he tried to throw like a no look at one point.
Right.
And you're just going like, what are you doing right now? But you're,
and nobody's fouling him intentionally either, because that's the other piece you can do in the playoffs. Just try to take him out. Maybe teams wouldn't want to do that because they want him to stay in the court.
To have seen it that way, because I felt the same way. It's like the Clippers have to survive these non-Zubac minutes, especially because Simmons is in there. And the more possessions they probably roll with Simmons, the more it's just guys screaming from the Golden State bench, like, don't even worry about it. Like, if he sets a screen, two with the ball. If he cuts through, don't worry about it. Like, if he's not going to catch it in the post and then turn around and work us in a mismatch or something, we'll be fine. It's just they really struggle to rebound during that stretch.
It's like that second Pat's Giants Super Bowl when Chad.
Exactly.
I remember Chad Ochocinco was the second receiver for the Pats. And I was at the game and you could see the entire Giants coverage was like, we don't have to worry about that side of the field. We could just cover him with one guy. The safety doesn't even have to shade over. That's Ben Simmons on offense. You don't have to shade over. It's like, what's he going to do? Can't shoot. Doesn't want to shoot. He's not going to drive to the basket because he doesn't want to get fouled. So they're just trying to survive 5 minutes a game. Back to Zubats. So he's plus 9.2 net heading into the game today. By far the best Clipper. He's played 2,600 plus minutes. He leads the league in offensive rebounds. For the year, he's 17 and 13. Since the All-Star break, he's 20 and 13. I think he's had 15 double-doubles in a row. He's shooting 65% since the All-Star break. And he stays on the court. That's the thing. Like Jaren Jackson, I just feel like would you be shocked in the play-in game if Jaren Jackson has five fouls with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of the play-in game? You wouldn't be, because he can't stay on the court. Zubac contests all the time with his hands up, but he stays in the court. So I don't know. I just think with him and Leonard and Harden, it's not the best big three of the 16 playoff teams, but it's a legitimate big three if Kawhi is going to play this way, I think.
Look, I'm on your side on this one, so I know it'd be better if we were to disagree about the whole thing. I mean, clearly Jaren Jackson has a much better offensive game than Zoo does, but he's asked to do two different things. I mean, his skill set, I wouldn't even compare the two things. If I were with Memphis, I'd be like, hey, Jaren, you know when the other team gets the ball and they're bringing it up the court? Run away from the guy with the ball in his hands. Like, stop.
And maybe grab like one more rebound a quarter would be awesome. A
couple more rebounds would be
maybe
nice.
Maybe get to like nine.
Yeah, but Zoo, if you look at the rim protection stuff, like Chet's off the charts. Porzingis' numbers are incredible. But Zoo's are really good there as well. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe the downside of Zoo was maybe you can't play five out. You know, does it impact some of the driving lane stuff that you want to do if you want to have a Norm, Kawhi, Harden group out there? Because I still feel like that's my favorite default of having any kind of big that can stretch a defense a little bit. Yeah. So you have to worry about the shooting. But to have Harden not have a center, as much as it's going to open up some space, like those two guys are just locked in right now. And Kawhi doesn't really need to drive. It's a lot of pull-up stuff with him. And even Jimmy Butler, who's changed the story for the Warriors this season, like you saw when they got one-on-one, he was too big for Butler. He's too big for him. And it's not like Butler's small or like a guy you would question his strength or toughness. But
so glad you brought that up.
Kawhi would get him in some spots like 12 feet in, and you're like, he doesn't have a chance. And they had to put Draymond back on him.
I noted it because it was weird to see, I don't want to use the word bullied, but basketball bullied, where he just was too strong for Butler. And you always assume Butler, in your head, he's like 6'9", 240, and he's just not.
It gives you a chance. Well, yeah, 6'7", yeah. Maybe, but a chance. Yeah. You're thinking, okay, at least I'm matching
Kawhi's
some
like,
of this.
Oh, this is great. Jimmy Butler's on me. He's not afraid of him. He's not going to get in an alpha battle with him. He's just going to do his machine thing. The other piece was Zubats and Harden together. Harden's had this before because he had it on the Rockets with Dwight during the last kind of stages of Dwight's prime. And then Capella too. But I mean, I'm talking big physical centers that are around the rim. And he really used Dwight. I mean, they made the 2015 West Finals. That team was good. I think what he's established with Zubats is pretty great. Like that, like they're really attuned to, they'll run that high screen at the very top. And then Zubats will roll down and he's almost like a left tackle. He's just like, he's kind of barreling into guys, knocking guys over. And Harden always seems to know exactly where he is. I think they're really good. I was talking to a bunch of Clipper fans over the last couple of days and they were kind of deep down wondering if they were better off going to the 7th seed and winning the play-in game and then playing Houston. But the rub on that is you don't get the 6 days of rest for Kawhi. So this worked out perfectly. I will say, I don't think it would have been a disaster for them if they fell to 7. I think this is worse for the Warriors because I don't think they want to put miles on these dudes. And I think it's creaky to begin with. We've seen some games like they had that 3rd and 4 last week and that Sunday game where Houston just annihilated them athletically and just seemed like they were 10 years younger than them. So now you're putting miles on them in the Tuesday game with Memphis. Now you're starting the playoffs. You just don't, it's just you're adding miles to a team that doesn't need miles. Curry already looks, you know, I don't know how many injuries he's nursing at this point, but it's at least 3.
They needed this bad for bad. Everything you just said. And to see what Steph looked like after that time off, it's a bit like that Kyrie stuff that we used to talk about a couple of years ago when Kyrie was going off because he wasn't playing that much. It was
right.
Like,
I once can't a week, Kawhi.
Yeah, but it was like, I can't believe Kyrie's doing this. Like, look, he's barely even playing. And you're like, no, the whole point is he's this fresh. Like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
You only have to play like once a week. And I'm not even turning into the Kyrie conversation, but I think it's just something to remember when somebody's not available all the time. It actually can be an advantage as opposed to losing your rhythm. So in the games where Steph came back in that Memphis game, I was watching, being like, holy shit, like he is flying around. And I don't know that, you know, I'm necessarily like looking at it being like worried. He had a really slow start. Then he has 18 to send it to overtime in the fourth quarter. So it's like, okay, it's fine.
Vintage.
He's relocating the way he should be. And, you know, I look at some of the Butler stuff because the record's so absurd. They're a completely different team since that trade in every statistical category. But maybe going to that game live against the Lakers where he decided to start playing like 14 minutes into the game, I'm like, you know, dude, these are like, granted, they won that game and Steph was brilliant, but you're like, you're going to need to not be as passive. And he wasn't, I don't think, at the start of tonight at all. Like, he got it going, I think, when they needed him. But overall, Butler's still only taking 10 shots a game. He was taking 10 shots a game in Miami. The metrics are always great for him because the free throw rate is so absurd. But they may, I don't know if it's a, hey, it's playoff Jimmy, so none of it really matters. But there's probably still, even with this great turnaround, probably moments for him where it's like, you need to be looking for your stuff a little bit more.
Quarter, it felt like he was taking over the game, and then he just didn't shoot again for a while.
Yeah, he'll go through these spells where I would just think that in the postseason, and his work over the last few years tells us that he's going to be that guy again. But I think it gets lost in this turnaround because he still is really pacing himself at times offensively. But the fact that he's even there has made Steph's life better, because when they were up, just falling apart, it's like, dude, you're asking Steph to run around for 20 seconds and get free and nobody cares. Like, nobody cares about any of these other guys.
The free throws are huge. They stop the game. They put pressure on the other team. He's so competitive. The Clippers are a bad matchup for them. They've been a bad matchup for them for a couple years. I've been to games where I was like, how are the Clippers winning this? They would just be able to turn it on. I don't know. I wonder in a weird way if this Memphis play-in game is easy for the Warriors and they get the 2-7 with Houston and they can somehow from a health standpoint be okay. This probably worked out. I know not getting the rest sucks, but playing a Houston team that has no playoff pedigree at all. That's like a really, really young playoff team going against Steph and Jimmy and Draymond, right? And you can take that one and then round two, you know, potentially the Lakers or Minnesota. But if it's the Lakers, I think that Warriors match up really well with the Lakers. They're just going to play small against the Lakers. It's small ball against small ball. And I think they're going to be really comfortable against them.
I think you're right about that. I don't know if the Lakers, who want to play small, played into Golden State's hands in that last regular season game a couple weeks ago.
Like, intentionally? Like,
right. Well, clearly the Warriors would rather go small, even though they're playing post, but he's kind of that five-out guy that we're talking about here a little bit. They don't want to play Jackson Hayes. I don't know if that'll be a matchup-specific thing for the playoffs, but clearly their preference is Rui at center. And it's not that they're small, right? Because they're big at all their positions, other than Vincent or if Goodwin were to get any minutes. Like, they're actually a really big team, but
they're a bulky team.
You like their girth?
Yeah, they got a lot of girth.
I was trying to figure all this stuff out this morning. Like, I was going through the regular season series and then who missed how many games and that ends up.
It's the worst ever.
I did it again this year. I hate myself.
It's a nightmare.
Because even this game with the Clippers and Golden State, it's the first time everybody was ready to go. I mean, Kawhi and some of the other matchups hasn't even played against any of these teams because he came back so much later. And sometimes the schedule works out. It's like, all right, they've already played each other four times, but the fourth game was in December. So then you go, okay, what does that even mean as you get ready for the playoffs here? But that Houston game, I'm glad you brought up, because I was thinking, all right, is there a good part of this? Like, I would think the Warriors would rather play the Lakers just because there's not a size thing that's looming like Zubac. Granted, he wasn't going to be in the matchup in the first round.
Well, in this case, it would be a Şengün. Like, what do we do? Do we keep Looney out? Because did you notice in that Clipper game, the Warriors were playing really well with about 4 minutes left, and Draymond wasn't out there. and it was Looney because they needed him for Zubats, and Draymond was on the bench, and the Warriors, the ball was moving and looked good. And it got to the point where I was like, I wonder if they're going to bring Draymond in. And then obviously they went to commercial, came back, they brought him in. But, you know, that's not that, that's when he's not out there sometimes, I'm not saying they're better without him, but there's lineups without him that I kind of like, especially when Podzemski and Butler are flying around. I think Moody's turned into a guy that I really feel like is a guy now. Like defensively, he's really, yeah, really high level, don't you think?
Absolutely. And he deserves a ton of credit for turning himself into this. But I mean, he had plays where he stripped Norm just one-on-one at the top of it as they were trying to get another offense. He had the block on the left side. And it's just Moody's definitely, you're right. Like, he's turned himself into somebody that Kerr can probably trust depending on what the perimeter matchups are there. But I think that Houston win in Golden State going back not that long ago, just a few days ago,
it was a week ago.
Yeah, he's 1 of 10. Like, that's one of those Butler games where I'm like, does he need to take more than 7 shots in 33 minutes? And sometimes the shot attempts get lost in the free throws, but he only took 4 free throws in that one. And you had 42 shot attempts between Podzemski, Hield, and Payton, where,
well, I granted, asked
they
around,
shot it well, but that's probably not what you want. And they sold out. I mean, Houston did a terrific job of not only Amen being on him, but making sure, yeah, that wherever he was going, there was going to be a second defender there. So, yeah, it's kind of your
and
point.
And they were like, super physical.
Is it better to be against them because they don't have the big that scares you? Or is it, we're going to throw a million athletes with a ton of length at Steph, and so when we're done with Amen, then it's going to be Tari, and then we're going to have Brooks beat him up for a little bit, right, here. Like, that's where Butler, you're probably going, we need you to take 16 shots tonight in these games.
Yeah, that game they played Thursday, Friday, and again, older team, and they just seemed like they had no legs for that Houston game. But that's also the fear if you're playing Houston, because that team is always going to have energy. They're a really tough team. One of the things I love,
they had a day off, though. They had a day off in between there.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying the Thursday, Friday, those were two tough ones in a row because they're playing, you know, contenders. But
no, Ime, you're right. Those were big time games.
Ime will definitely, he's proven he does not kowtow to the super duper stars in the league. He likes to start ship to them, talk to them, likes to get his guys fired up to go against them. And they have a bunch of pit bulls to throw at Curry. They have a low post guy that's going to either force Draymond to have to guard a center, or, you know, they could go that double big lineup, which I think is not going to be easy for the Warriors. I don't love the matchup for them, but man, that Warriors, that Rockets playoff inexperience. You saw it today. I kind of feel like they wanted that Nuggets game. Did you watch the first half of that? Did you have that on?
Yeah, I mean, you could look and say they waved the white flag, but it's because they were getting beat. They were down 20.
They were getting their ass kicked. They played everybody, and they were playing hard. They wanted the game. I think, you know, knowing a little bit about Ime, I think he was like, look, this is a playoff game for us. Let's treat it like a playoff game. Let's see what we got. And they sucked. So not awesome for them. And conversely, that was the best game I've seen Denver play in a while. And maybe this new coach thing, if you read about all the dysfunction that was going on behind the scenes, maybe there's something to it. It's like peeling off, you know, peeling off a huge Band-Aid and just being like, fuck it.
I hate that I don't think it'll happen this time around, but we've lost Steph in the playoffs twice because of the play-in setup.
What do you mean? Oh, for so LA. Oh, I know.
No, he's 0-3 in play-in games.
Is that true? Oh,
remember,
my God,
lost,
you're right.
He lost to the Lakers, and then because they lost to the Lakers, they had to play Memphis, and he had 37 and 39 in those games, and they lost. And then in 24, he lost to Sacramento last year.
Well, the good news is I think Memphis just looks awful. I mean, you're not catching a team at a better time than this, whatever is happening with this Grizzlies team right now. So I'm not too concerned about the Warriors. They did something weird that I don't remember with the schedule, and I'm excited to talk about the matchups. There's no Thursday game this year, which I'm pretty sure that wasn't the case the last couple of years. Both of the playing games are Friday. Maybe they did that before and I just forgot. So if for some reason the Warriors lost that Tuesday game, they'd have to play Friday and then immediately on Sunday, which would not be awesome for them. Can we talk about all the matchups that came out of this quick? So we Warriors Rockets, which we hit. Do you share my same concerns with Houston? Like, Yeah, I know it's in there, but playoffs are a different animal. Do you have another level to go to, or do you think there's something more there that I'm not seeing?
I think they're really good. But, you know, we're looking at a two seed that over the course of 82 games, it's kind of like our Verno ambush talking about Memphis.
Yeah.
Where it was like, hey, they were the two seed. They were the two seed. Hey, they were the two seed before all this stuff. I mean, it's like 3 years you can point to them like, hey, being the two seed. The two seed some years sounds way better years removed than the reality of like what the records were of the teams that year. Denver was a one seed that year when Memphis was a two seed. And I think Denver had 53 wins in 23 when they won the title. And then if you go through the rest of the seeding, I mean, that's why it's so crazy to kind of look back and you're like, hey, Memphis was the two seed. Well, they had 51 wins. Sacramento was a three seed with 48 wins. 48 wins now in the West would put you either the seven or eight seed. Yeah. So
conference was so much weaker and more injuries, all kinds of stupid stuff.
So look, I definitely will have hesitation about big boy playoff closing offensive minutes for the Houston Rockets. I think it's completely fair. And I think Udoka will decide on the fly. I would be shocked if it's a steady closing five during clutch time for them, where I think he'll go with some guys and he'll abandon others and he won't give a shit, which is actually probably the best thing you could hope for with a coach, where he's like, this night, I mean, we did a conversation on it, right? About this exact topic. And, you know, I looked, some people were giving a shit, Rockets fans, like, oh, they would never do that. That night, I think the next night, he benched Jalen Green with 5 minutes to go in the game and then brought him in with 11 seconds left because they were down. The game was already over and it was like, can you get us a bucket here? So,
yeah,
Jalen's probably the best option still with Van Vliet, but I don't know, man. I've seen enough of him this year to know that it gets clogged despite how great their record was in the clutch. Do you have anything else?
It's a team that looks better when they're up 10. I think this series will set the standard for lobbying the press between games to get whatever agenda you want from the next game. You know, Kerr's going to be working hard the whole Houston hold staff away from the ball. They're too physical with him. They're getting away with stuff. They'll send quips. They'll do that whole thing. And then, you know, there'll be a backlash to that. And I just think it's going to be a war of words. But you also have Dylan Brooks in this series. Pretty storied history with Golden State. You have a Golden State Houston history that's pretty good. So if this is what we end up with, and a weird matchup where you have size against a team that doesn't really want to play with size, and then older perimeter guys against this kind of new wave of perimeter guys who we haven't really seen in the spotlight like this. So, it's a good one. I would personally still take Golden State if I had to. Do you want to guess the line? Oh, they don't have a line for that yet.
We don't know the matchup for Memphis.
I do have
Golden
lines
State?
For the other two. Have you looked or no?
I haven't.
Okay. Let's play a quick guess the lines. Trademark Cousin Sal.
Lakers. I'll say Golden. Okay. Go ahead.
Lakers, Minnesota. LA has home court. What do you think the line is on FanDuel right now?
For the series, Lakers minus 185.
Wow. That was really good. Minus 172. And we'll talk about that in 1 second. Denver Clippers, what do you have? Denver has home court.
I'm going to say Clippers. Because look, this has been going on for a while. This is like a month of this. Okay, so this isn't new. I almost feel like this might be closer to Clippers minus 200.
Denver has home court.
Oh, so they're just going with the home court part of this? So Denver's
I'm just reminding you.
Clippers minus 150 then.
Nuggets minus 144. Sounds like we have some wagers to make. I felt the same way. I thought it would be like a pick'em, and maybe it will be by the time we get there. Clippers and six is an interesting bet. And then in the East, which you probably already know.
That actually shocks me. I mean, I realize that it's Denver, and I know that it's Jokic, which I learned from one of the playoff previews on ESPN. But this Clippers thing is fucking real, man. So, but you know, are we tricking ourselves?
We're not.
Okay, right. If Kawhi gets hurt, that's, we all understand what is potentially in play for a guy that's in street clothes to close out the last 4 years, I think, in the playoffs. But are we tricking ourselves into believing that the elevated pace, understanding Harden's tendencies more, the deer in the headlight, game two or game four from him, and then we see it and we go, how could you have ever picked this team? Because I'm going to pick him against Denver. I don't know how far I'm going to go with it, but I'm going to pick him against Denver.
I'm 100% picking him against Denver, and it feels like we're in a Law & Order SVU episode where it's like, I've watched this exact episode 13 times. Why do I think it's not the dead lady's husband, who's because he's a doctor and he seems like a great guy?
Well, no, that's can't back. Be him. They have it to go back. Yeah, he's at the country club.
Don't go back to the hospital. He's fine. This guy loved her. That's how I feel about if you like the Clippers. It's like, this is the year Kawhi stays healthy, and this is the year James Harden isn't going to shit on himself in a playoff series. So we got this.
Is there anything too? Because I want to ask you this question. Harden not having to be the one because of Kawhi. And it's like, okay, but that was supposed to be Embiid. So Harden wasn't supposed to be the one in the Sixers series. But then we could have this whole other Embiid playoff discussion that we don't have to do this year. Is there anything to the importance of him being reduced going in that makes you feel better?
100%. Well, there's two things that make me feel better about him. One is that this is the best supporting cast for him that I can remember him having. It's all the things you would want to put around him if we were just like, I'm going to come over to your house. Let's spend the next 2 hours picking types of players that you would want to put around James Harden.
Let's definitely do that. Yeah.
I'll come over tonight. But you'd want a rebounding center who could finish around the basket and finish the alley-oops. You'd want an older star who could be like, I've got this. That's Kawhi. You'd want some streaky shooters, right? That's Norm Powell. That's who's the other streaky shooter in that team? I'm blanking.
Derrick Jones Jr.
I guess he is kind of streaky. And then you'd want like length to protect him on defense.
And then
so
Chris
that he
Dunn.
Didn't have to play defense. And then the Chris Dunn piece. I just really like the roster. I think they did an awesome job.
I think we'd probably do a little bit
better.
The Dunn
Derrick Jones things. Well, I'm just saying realistically, if you're using the salary cap.
Yeah, okay,
and you had
all right,
to
fine.
Put together a team, it's going to probably look something like this. But yeah, the Kawhi thing, this is what all the Clipper fans I know, they're like, it's a yeah, but it just is. Every year he's pulled the rug out from under them. And every year they believed and thought he was going to be finally, this is, and then the rug gets pulled out. So this is like year six of this for them.
So you're saying better than Westbrook and then PJ Tucker at center?
Yeah, slightly. I think so.
The death screens from Zoo? Like you run into one of his screens, you're going to get a step.
The other thing with them is I just don't, this Denver bench, I'll say this. I refuse to believe Westbrook won't be heard from in the wrong way in a Clippers Nuggets series. He's just looming in the wrong way because there's going to be a game. There's going to be a Jamal Murray has to come out because his knee's not feeling great. Somebody's in foul trouble where Westbrook's just going to be involved. And I've seen enough with him at crunch time. I don't think he's somebody that can be out there in the final 4 minutes game.
I don't know if he will. I think that Sacramento game that might earlier have been this past week. No, I think that was a sign. I think that was a sign. They went with Pickett to close.
Oh, when they drove with Pickett, yeah.
Right, so with
Adelman. Yeah, but Adelman, Pickett's like never been in any games. Like that's the thing.
Totally
like,
fair.
Jesus. That makes me more nervous. Look, I don't know which one I would want less.
Just
probably
like
pick
full statement on this.
Yeah.
Westbrook's actually taking, I think, too much shit on this.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Russillo backs Westbrook.
Now, if you're telling me he had to not make any mistakes all season, okay, fine. And the fact that I think game of the year is still the overtime 60-point triple-double from Jokic against Minnesota because you had Ant and Jokic dueling each other. But you're right. The stakes are not the same as game 82, but that's my favorite game of the season. And you have the Westbrook layup or not killing clock or then the foul at the end. But because everybody was watching that game because it's one of the best games of the entire year, then it started turning into like, look, if you're expecting a mistake-free experience from him, then just pick a different guy. Look, even Steph, who I love, he had two bad turnovers late in this game. He got caught in the corner. He had another thing he was trying to do in the baseline, but the 18 points kind of makes up for that a little bit. But with all of this, because of his history, where it felt like every place he's gone, post OKC couldn't wait for him to get out of the. Although I'd
it
say
turns
Washington,
into the half and half in the fridge yeah. that you have to sniff, and you're like, oh, I got to throw this out.
Although I think Wizards fans enjoyed it. I think Wizards fans enjoyed when he was there. So I would add that one to like the positive part of this. And sure, should Malone have let him gone to LA and get the vet treatment that the other guys did? I don't know. Like, whatever. That's, I don't think that's why they fell apart, but he's being thrown into the storyline of this a few times. Oh, well, Westbrook also did this and there was some complaints over the minutes. I've been, maybe because my standards or expectations for him are so low, he's done the best job he's ever done in his career post OKC accepting his role.
We agree. I'm just saying.
You can't believe him saying it?
No, if he's the sixth most important person on your team, there might be some issues at this point in his career. We should have mentioned him earlier at the top when we were talking about people taking the mantle for Rory now that Rory's won, who would be the best people. Westbrook kind of rising up as a super sub in the playoffs. Helping drag
yeah,
the Nuggets.
It's not the same, though. It's not the same. Like, if Chris Paul gets a ring next year, by the way, shout out Chris Paul, 82 games.
82 games.
If he gets a ring now, it doesn't mean, like, hey, I was right. So. I also don't know that Rory had as many tumultuous stops as Westbrook did. So, I don't know if that one works.
Westbrook, 10 years from now, it's going to be great for him when. It's a little like what's happened to Carmelo and some others where we just forget all the bad stuff. Like Russell Westbrook, who's the problem? MVP, triple-double.
Are you anticipating kids don't even know clips?
I think it could be there.
Hey, if you put together those, they're going to be like, wonder how many rings did he have?
This guy had 25 rebounds in a game? I'm convinced the Clippers will beat the Nuggets and also fully expect something heartbreaking to happen for them. It's one of those I'm going to bet the Clippers and probably regret it by game three. We're going to take a break and then we got to talk a couple of the other playoff series here. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Spring is here. My favorite time of the year. That means the NBA playoffs are here too. What am I the most excited about? I'm excited to see if the Celtics can defend their title. I'm excited to see if Steph Curry and Jokic can keep going and going and going round after round. I'm excited for the potential of an LA versus LA playoff series. It's never happened. Clippers, Lakers, never in my lifetime. Is OKC for real? Is Cleveland for real? Is SGA going to prove that he is the best scoring guard in the postseason, basically since Michael Jordan, since Kobe Bryant? Is he on that level? We're all going to find out. There's plenty to look forward to on and off the court, like Michelob Ultra courtside. That's another thing. It's getting fans closer to the game with unique prizes. Plus, they're giving you a chance to win tickets to the NBA Finals. You heard me. The NBA Finals, which I hope are in Boston. Just head to MichelobUltra.com/NBA Finals. Michelob Ultra courtside NBA Finals sweepstakes. No purchase necessary. Open to U.S. residents, excluding Maryland residents. 21 and up. Begins 9 a.m. ET on February 16, 2025. Ends on May 5th, 2025. See official rules at MichelobUltra.com/rules for price and details. Message and data rate may apply. Void where prohibited. All right, so we got Minnesota Lakers. This feels like a win for the Lakers, and I'm not sure who I would have wanted to play the least if I were them, but because it basically came down to the Clippers, Golden State, or Minnesota. They were going to play one of those teams, being in the three spot. And Minnesota, I think, feels like the right outcome for them because I don't know how Gobert exists in this series. So let's start there. How does Gobert exist in this series?
Oh, man. I mean, Luka, it was funny when he was tearing up. Did you hear about this? They asked him which moment got him in the tribute video. And he was like, when I hit that step back on Gobert.
Mm.
Gobert played it great, yeah. I thought. Dudes hate Gobert. Kevin Porter Jr., not afraid to get into it with everybody. Just actually important for Milwaukee lately. Been playing some good basketball.
Getting into it with everybody.
Everybody.
What happens if he ends up on the Pistons next year? We might have to have security guards on hand for every game.
Beef Stew's just like, look, first practice, new guys, we beat the shit out of you. But it's just sort of like, I don't know if you saw Colors, it's an older movie. Like, we're just going to have to like initiate you. So, you know, ice up.
Like, don't look at me.
I think you're right about that because I it's a bit like the Ime thing that we were talking about there with Finch. Like, will he? Because there were times the year it like felt like he was sick of Randle. Randle's probably played the best basketball. They needed him huge in that Memphis game. He was fantastic when they just ran away from the Grizzlies. Gobert is, like, especially in that matchup, he's closing. But I do wonder, with the stuff that we're talking about, how the Lakers prefer to be real perimeter-based, if it would be a situation where they're going to be, you know, bringing Rudy out. Because, like, the best part about Rudy is the guy screens all night. He plays his ass off. He hustles like crazy. But nobody wants to pass to him. And then if he gets caught in a switch hunting season, then yeah, it could be, I think, like Houston, Bill. I think Minnesota's
right.
Going to have
like
a bunch
Shengun of different Adams combo to make sense in a series. This, they're just going to play Luka and LeBron and Rui as much as they possibly can with Reeves and pick a guard. And they're just going to spread them out. JJ, as we've discussed many times, this coaching staff's done a really good job at figuring out what the matchup is and then how to exploit. They're going to exploit him and they're going to play him off the court. But that's going to lead to Minnesota probably ending up with Naz Reid and Randle and McDaniels and Edwards and DiVincenzo if they want size, or Conley if they don't care about it, as the five they're going against. And that's going to be hard for the Lakers defensively, I think. They're going to have all these, they're going to attack Reeves. They're going to probably try to get Edwards in as many switches as they possibly can against Reeves. And they're going to have the same shooting stuff. And I actually think this will be a higher scoring series than I think people realize. Because people think of Minnesota as this awesome defensive team. And, you know, if you take Gobert out of it, it changes a little bit. But I think Minnesota has a real chance in the series.
I think you're kind of shortchanging the perimeter guys, though, from what we've seen in the playoffs last year.
The Minnesota perimeter guys.
Defensively, Jaden's really good on the ball against somebody smaller. The problem is him on the ball against Luka. Like, I think
we
need
saw it
Earth
already.
Against him. Right, yeah. Exactly. So, with Jaden's defensive resume, which I think all of us really like, that's probably not going to hold up. And you're right. We saw some of that stuff last year.
Well, they now, could do the whole thing where they're like, let's take out Reeves. Let's try to take out Reeves as much as we possibly can, because Luka and LeBron are going to get all their stuff anyway.
What do you mean, offensively? Like,
I'm just saying,
on-
like, just make sure Reeves doesn't get going when they have those spots where, like, you know, they take Luka out and it's LeBron and Reeves together. When it's the two of them, be like, look, we got to take out Reeves. They're never going to stop Luka. The thing that worries me more from Minnesota is Randle, who, as you mentioned, has been really good the last, like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks. But part of it is because he's so physical, and especially if you guard him with anybody smaller, he really has been bully balling people lately. But you're not bully balling any of those dudes on the Lakers. Those guys have more size than he does, you know? So then it comes down to, if you're looking at scoring and the end of the game stuff, it's going to be a lot of Edwards. And we've seen mixed results with that. When Edwards is like in the high 20s, you know, if he has a 31 field goal game, I never really like Minnesota as much. I like when it's a little more democratic with the ball usage.
The other thing too is
Finney Smith
on
Edwards too.
Three of their games were October 22nd, December 2nd, December
13th. No, I looked this up. Yeah, right? We didn't even see like both full teams that we have now against each other. So we have no idea what to expect.
No, but I think attacking Luka is going to happen, you know, but they're probably just going to double Ant and then go, all right, in the McDaniels, Conley minutes, go ahead and shoot. And if we get burnt by that, fine. Maybe it changes with DiVincenzo. And then I think there's a lot of room for Randle here, because you're going to sell out to stop Ant. You're going to keep two with the ball on him on all this stuff. You're going to have to help out Luka. You know, it depends, like, LeBron energy level. You know, it's fascinating, because you went to that game when he came back against Chicago, and it would make sense. He'd had times off, but he moved so well in that game. And then you can turn on a Lakers game 2 nights later and you're like, what's going on? And then against Dallas,
well, you saw him. When did you see him last week?
Yeah.
Didn't you go a couple games ago?
I did.
How did he look in that game?
It was fine, but there's like, clearly he knows how to pace himself probably better than anybody in the entire league. Like, this is like year 4 or 5. We talked about him like, yeah, he kind of picks spots. It's like, all right, yep, he had 30, 12, and 11 again. So he's doing fine. And I'd imagine that his intensity on some of the defensive stuff, where I don't know that he can get away with the kind of switching where it's like, hey, you go, like, I'm always staying here so I don't have to move on a switch, or I'm going to pre-switch something to get out of it ahead of time so that I'm not in this thing over and over again. I think in the regular season, you can get away with some of that stuff. I don't know that that'll happen in the playoffs. And I imagine his intensity and the time off and a little bit, it's just an easier schedule than what you have in the regular season, even with the raised intensity. You know, we always seem to forget that. It's like, hey, these built-in days off, you're staying in the same place for a little while.
Yeah, you get like 3 days off between game one and game two after you've already gotten a week off. It's perfect for him.
So I think it's expected that he's going to be more intense with all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it may come down to like the Rui part of it, where Gobert has to respect him and his shooting from three. So if Rui's in the screen or something like that, it's like, okay, well, I can't ignore this guy. Like, that might be the difference in all this stuff. Because
is Rui on your first team? Is Rui on your first team? I can't believe how much I ended up liking this guy. Team.
Well, I would say
because I was starting at about a zero with him.
Yeah,
and that's now I'm at about an 81.
Everything we're always talking about is based on like, well, where were you before? Like, you really like him? No, he was an 11 out of 100, and now he's like 50. So yeah, that's doesn't mean I'm in love with
the guy. I like his competitiveness, and I do think when he's good, if he's good in a game, they become really hard to beat.
Like, I thought
if he has it going, it's like, oh shit.
He reminded me a lot of Kat. Like, you sit there and say, well, Kat was a good matchup for Jokic, and you go, all right, well. You know, is it 30 points? It's really the difference in these playoff games because Jokic is going to get his 30. Was it an easy 30 or was it a hard 30? And I think Kat at least provided some kind of resistance to him. And I thought that regular season game where the Lakers put it on him, they're really good on how they didn't want to space the floor defensively. And a lot of that started with Rui being tasked with, can you just at least challenge him on catches? Can you make him have to work a little bit more? And I thought he had a really good game there.
Well, we have a lot of time to talk about that series. In the East, we ended up with Pistons Knicks, and we ended up with Bucks Pacers, and the Pacers are -230 favorites over the Bucks, which I think is factoring in people don't seem to think we're going to see Dame again. But the way Giannis is playing the last couple weeks, and there's a weird energy to him now that I kind of like. Did you see all the stuff he did with in the Pistons game?
I watched the whole game. I loved it.
And there's been signs of this before. He's done this in the past a couple of times because I think the perception is, oh, Giannis, he's such a sweetheart of a guy. Yeah. And he's actually kind of a little bit nastier than I think people realize. But in that Pistons game, he was really like fucking with them. And it got me excited for the Indiana series because Indiana has a better team. They've been playing better for 3 months. They have home court. They're going to push the pace. I think they're going to make it really hard for the Bucks guards just to even bring the ball up and start the offense. But yeah, Giannis is on a tear. And we'll see what happens. Could Giannis beat the Pacers basically by himself would be the scenario. I wouldn't bet against it, would you?
No, I wouldn't, because I feel like we're going to look back at this Giannis stretch and go, he only won one MVP out of this whole thing. And I mean, granted, everybody's going to remember what Jokic has been doing here, but this is almost like a Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali thing in a way, because I look at the numbers and it's not like when you watch it, it deceives you. It's just so stupid how good he is. And if you are not ready for it, and I know this isn't new, but watching that Detroit game in particular, because I wanted to see how it playing out. Cade was coming off the great Knicks finish. So I wanted to see kind of how they were going to defend him. And then we were kind of looking at like playoff seating and wondering what you could have as a potential matchup with all this stuff. But he's going crazy the whole time, which is my favorite thing about him, is that he is that competitive. So when he blocks Beasley's shot, which was a huge shot in the game, and Beasley, who feels himself the entire two fucking hours of a basketball game. Yeah. So they're already gotten into
it. And they play it together.
Right. And Kevin Porter Jr. dunks on Duren, which was filthy, and lets him have it a little bit. Duren comes down, screens the shit out of him. Porter doesn't like it. Porter runs right into him and hits him in a way like only a smaller player can get away with doing that to a bigger guy. And then it causes kind of the melee. Like, Giannis at that point was like, all right, like he is one of those guys. I don't think he gets enough credit for like when you piss him off. I'm not saying it's Jordan, but there's an alarm that goes off. Like, once Giannis is pissed off in a game, so he's just going to have to get pissed off, I guess, four times in this. Can something happen to him enough where it just becomes unstoppable? Because they are the better team. And I think the Bucks are still searching for it. And, you know, even with Kevin Porter getting some better nights out of it, Like, that's asking a lot of that.
40 plus minutes in that one game?
Asking him to cover in a playoff rotation and like, hey, don't have this fall apart. Because there's other times, I'd say a couple weeks ago, I was like, what is Doc doing? And clearly Doc was like, I may need this dude. And we know how talented he is. So he was letting him kind of run the show. That Houston game comes to mind when he was just a disaster, but he's played better. But then I'm like, okay, so the Pacers, who I really like all their depth.
Right.
I'm going to pick Milwaukee with them still trying to kind of figure this thing out on the fly.
You know, in my favorite sports book ever, Breaks of the Game, which is about a Trailblazers season, the 79 and 80 season. Bill Walton's gone and Dr. Jack Ramsey is trying to figure out what the team's identity is and just can't figure it out. And then near the end of the season, they bring up this guy, Billy Ray Bates, who becomes like one of the best characters in the book. And he's just like basically this one-on-one ISO guy who doesn't play anything like the Dr. Jack style at all. He's not like, you know, I pass, I cut. He's just like a one-on-one guy, but they're starting to play better with him. And Dr. Jack has this crisis of philosophy of, this guy, he gives us the best chance to win. We just, let's start running plays for him. And he starts really playing him. I almost feel like that's the Porter thing with Doc, where he's just like, I'm out of moves. Like, if this Porter thing doesn't work, we're fucked. This guy can create shots for himself and other people, and he plays hard. And I guess we're going to have to use him if Dame doesn't come back. Because their best lineup has Porter in it now. So we'll see.
Yeah, because he is that good at getting wherever he wants on the floor and his athleticism and the finish and all that kind of stuff. But, like, you know, is there a Lopez conversation on how that plays out? Is Kuzma going to play great in the first half? Does Prince hit enough shots? You know, AJ Green's clearly going to get minutes because he's a major part of the rotation. It is funny, though, like when you think about the Pacers and why you'd pick against them. Since the All-Star break, they're eighth in defense, which feels like impossible. Like, that group's figuring it out defensively enough. And Milwaukee's, 16th. But they had a good record. I mean, they closed 19-10.
They're eighth in defense and first in stupid losses. That would be the other case for Milwaukee. I think they need three honest games and then one game where Indiana does what they do, which is just to completely fuck up a winnable game and do two stupid things in the last minute and you can't believe they lost. So that's the recipe, I think. But Giannis, like, you know, I had Tatum third MVP all year.
And I don't know how you can put anybody ahead of Giannis.
That's my point. These last 4 weeks, like, Giannis has to be third. He just has to. And I love the Tatum year, and we've talked about it a million times. I just think he's been awesome. I think he's been awesome as a two-way guy, as a rebounder. I think he's fifth in points. He's top 20 in rebounds. He's top 20 in assists. It's like maybe fifth in threes. Like, he's guarded everybody in the league. But what Giannis did the last 4 weeks, I think he has to be third. And then if you're putting him third, this will be a seventh straight first-team All-NBA. And during those 7 years, he's averaged 30, 12, and 6. And this year, he's averaging 30, 12, and 7. So this is like LeBron-level consistency, where people 50 years from now will be on whatever the version of Basketball Reference is. I'm sure it'll be some sort of AI tablet that you can just touch with your hand and it just comes out of the thin air. People will be looking at this like, Jesus Christ, what about this Giannis guy? It's like the same way you would look at Karl Malone seasons now and be like, oh my God. He put up 29 and 10 for 12 years.
This will be seven straight. He should finish third in the MVP. And I even feel bad, you know, putting him there because of how special he is. But whatever. I mean, we've got a great top of the MVP class this year. But it's going to be seven straight years with the top four finishing MVP. And you start putting that resume up against, like, the Birds.
All-timers. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's pretty near that vicinity now, that Shaq, Hakeem, Moses area in the all-time grouping. He's not there yet, but I think if he keeps going for a couple more years at this pace, could happen. Did you land on Mitchell fifth for the MVP spot, or do you have somebody else? Or are you still figuring it out?
No, I'm still figuring it out. We still have, what, like 4 days?
Yeah, days. I'm still figuring it out, too. Because normally when on the Sunday pod, we would do a lot of our picks, but I'm not.
I'm glad we're not. I was like, oh no, are we doing this today?
No,
I have, for defensive player of the year, I'm pretty sure I already know what I'm doing, but specifically on the defensive stuff, like, I'm fine with all the other things. But defensive stuff, I want to be able to make the rounds and talk to enough people because I just don't want to miss anything. Fair. I don't want to be sitting there look at defensive box score and going, well, this guy was better than this guy.
If I gave you two of James Harden, Tyrese Halliburton, and Zubats, and I can only have two spots for third team All-NBA, though you're a modern All-NBA voter where you just pick the best guys. You don't care about the facsimile of a fake team.
I don't know that that's true. I feel a bit like the college football playoff commissioner where I'm never going to give you an answer. I'm not going to talk about conferences being better than other conferences. I'm going to say that all of it's factored in. This is important. That's not important.
So you have no set strategy.
I have fundamental beliefs, but each year is a different field. So I'm not going to tell you that I'm prioritizing this all the time because 1 year it may not matter as much. You know, the standings thing, I know you guys do a couple weeks ago and you didn't seem to like that very much, but I was watching.
I never like being you guys.
Yeah.
I never take anything personally though.
I don't know if that's true, but.
Well, I mean with you.
No, but I was watching Zach, right?
Yeah.
Fired up to have him on the team. And he was talking about his MVP vote. And he was like, I've been SGA all season long. And now I'm just starting to think like, how can I not vote for Jokic?
This is what I brought to you last week. I'm really struggling with this and I don't have a pick yet. I don't.
You haven't decided who you're going to vote for MVP.
It's like honestly 50-50 for me. I watch Jokic.
But it's the standings, right? It's the standings. And I think there's times you maybe, I mean, could it be the tiebreaker for an all NBA? I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but I don't know, man. I'm not having a hard time with this one. I'm voting for Jokic.
Oh, you've officially decided.
I've decided a while ago. And I wouldn't say anything's happened recently where I'm like, oh, I'm wrong.
I went back through all the MVPs that bothered me over the years and over and
Which
over
one's
again.
Number one?
Well, just over and over again, the standings driven ones are the ones where we get in the most trouble, where we don't just divest ourselves completely and be like, who's actually the most valuable player, right? Like if you just, the problem with the SGA candidacy, and he's been amazing and we've talked about it, he's having one of the best guard offensive seasons in the history of basketball. But if you gave Jokic SGA's 2 through 12, I'm pretty sure he would be able to win 65 to 70 games with the team that SGA has. And that's where it gets dicey. Now, they're a top 5 team. I never want to have an MVP unless it's a team that has a good record, that it's at least in the vicinity, right? They're one game away from being a 3 seed. They're one of the 8 or 9 best teams in the league. But when you see all the dysfunction they clearly had the whole year and over again, you would just watch. He would just, despite the odds, would just keep it together. And it was amazing to watch. And it's going to be the first thing I remember about this season was watching him this year. So that to me, like that was one of my, when I wrote my MVP column, it was like 4 things. What are you going to remember first when you remember this season? For me, it's what Jokic did with this fucked up Nuggets team that fired their coach with a week left. And he had like the greatest offensive season I've seen since Jordan played. So it's like, I that's what I'm struggling with because SGA has won 68 games and he was awesome.
So a dysfunction boost, is that new?
Dysfunction boost? Well, yeah, it's like what? Like, was it even more dysfunctional than we could ever imagined? We knew all this shit, but I don't know what it's like to play in a basketball team where you have this much animosity behind the scenes. Like, maybe it doesn't matter as much as we think. I don't know. It would seem like it would matter some, and it seems like they were really, really genuinely tired of Malone, which was a whole other issue beyond the whole he's not communicating with the GM. He's spitefully playing people that the GM likes or not playing. Like whatever all that other shit, but the fact that they almost got to 50 wins with how Murray looked the first 2 months, like it's kind of incredible in the West.
They did. Today was 50 wins.
50 wins with the season they had we did that live show in Denver. When was that? Beginning of December. And we led with the whole thing about Jamal Murray had like 8 awful weeks at that point. And that was like one of our lead things where we were like, let's have an honest conversation about this. Never going to be the same?
Next year, like Murray's lighting it up or whatever, then the national broadcast will be like, and he still never made an all-star game. He'd be like, okay, do you want to go through the years again?
This is like the LeBron MVP thing.
Yeah.
Or look, the Kobe MVP thing is actually worse.
I think Jokic is the best player in the world. I think his stats are close enough, depending on which metrics you want to look at, if not superior to SGA's. And it'd be one thing if they were a disastrous team on the season, but I didn't really have a hard time with it.
He's going to be the first thing I remember about this season. I've never seen... and that the,
more one so of the, than Shireman, the way he's closed?
Well, that's been pretty good. That's been watching some of the Joe Maz lineups. Yeah, I was bummed that it's Clippers Nuggets because I, you know, I have a vested interest in the Clippers advancing because I want to go to the games, right?
Right.
But I love Jokic and I want to keep playing because I like watching him. So I've just never, the stuff that he did this season, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen somebody do more for their team. It's like, what the fuck else could he got every rebound. He led the offense up. He took all of the shots in crunch time. Like he literally did everything. Jalen Williams to you is an all-NBA guy or no? Just in general. Is he good
enough?
Not
ready to answer that. Okay. He's certainly on the list.
All right.
Are you?
I have him tentatively in there right now because I think with the season OKC had and the season Cleveland had, I find it hard to believe you can't get to, as you know, I gravitate a little bit more toward the record, especially with those late teams. And I'm between Dort and Mobley for defensive player of the year now. I haven't decided either, but those are my two finalists.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning Dort.
It's another one of those, I can only judge what I've watched on TV and what I've seen in person. And I just thought he was the guy that jumped out to me this year. Daniels a little bit too, but I think some of the stuff Daniels did, just because it was so unique, just to watch somebody poke check somebody from 40 feet from the basket, I was like, literally haven't seen that. His hands were everywhere, his anticipation, it was awesome. But that just wasn't a good enough defensive team. So you basically have to be Wembanyama at that point. The thing with Dort is it's like old school pickup basketball. Like, who's their best guy? It's that guy. Lou, you're going to defend him. Don't let him score. And then the guy doesn't score.
Just or the guy has the worst end of his life. Yeah, I normally always am going to just... I just think it's hard to have a perimeter guy and say this perimeter guy is as valuable as this other guy is. That's a big who's coming over to help at the rim in the times where Mobley gets switched out of the perimeter guy and he holds up really well. So I've kind of struggled with the Dort Mobley thing, but I will tell you, again, defensively on these awards, I like to talk to people because it's just the one you don't want to miss. And right, it's a hard award to feel like, okay, I've absolutely nailed this, especially when you do the first and second team. And the Draymond push has been incredible, and I don't want to act like you're dismissing Draymond, but sometimes there can be this push where you're like, you know, this is a six-month award. Like, let's remember that. And Mobley, to start the season, there's some numbers that tell you like his impact was far greater in the first half of the season, second half of the season. But back to the original, like asking people about defensive stuff, the number of times that people just kind of stop and take a breath when they talk about Lou Dort that are working in the league every night, it's like you can't help but be impressionable.
There was somebody wrote a piece about for 2.5 straight months, nobody scored 30 on them. And it was... I also think, and we talked about this when Marcus won Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago, which, you know, I forget who he beat. I think the perimeter defender is more important than it used to be for stuff like this, just because all these teams have these awesome guys that you at least have to make work. And I don't know. I just, what he did to Jaylen Brown in that Boston game was just nuts. But I watched them like when they played, I went to two OKC games and both times Harden was like, fuck. You could just see him. He's like, Jesus Christ. And then if Dort comes out of the game, I have these other two. So
the smart one felt like a campaign though, too. Like he just, yeah, he did all these interviews where he kept just going, oh, you know, we never get to win it or, you know.
Right. Well, they were number one in defense. There were some good advanced metrics, but yeah, it's looking back, maybe not.
I don't know. I'd argue Rob Williams, although you could then go, okay, but Rob got to do what he did because he was on somebody in the corner who primarily it would be hopefully a non-shooter. So then he could just roam and freelance the entire time. So the perimeter guys, usually it takes so much more for me to go into him. And by the way, he actually beat another perimeter guy that year because Bridges was in second. Gobert was third.
East quickly. We talked about Bucks Pacers, Knicks Pistons. Knicks are -460. We've been dying for this series. I think there's going to be, as it gets closer, some Pistons upset buzz. I think it's a really hard ask if the five Knicks guys are all playing together. I was talking to a Knicks fan about this. If you catch them on a night when one or two of those five guys aren't playing, they look, you know, incredibly vulnerable with reason because they don't really have a bench. But those five guys together with breaks between the games and all the guys they can throw at Cade, this just seems like a tall ask for them to, and I think that's why the line reflects it. I really want to talk myself into a Pistons upset case, but I think just the fact that they made the playoffs, they're a six seed, they had the year they had, Cade established himself as a guy. Durin has been, you know, I think he's now one of the best young centers in the league. Some of their signings are really smart. That's kind of a win in itself. And now they're going to go in this series. They'll bang the Knicks around. There'll be a couple altercations. They'll make a name for themselves. And that's probably the win. If those five guys are healthy in the Knicks, I just don't see any way to tribute some.
Since the All-Star break, and granted, the numbers are a little weird for the Knicks, but who do you think's better defensively?
I would bet the ratings better for Denver Detroit, because all the advanced metrics have been favorable for them last 30 games.
Since the All-Star break, the Knicks are 11th on defense. The Pistons are 15th. So, and by the way, points-wise, it's a half a point. So it's not like some dramatic difference here. Now, is that because Brunson was missing some of those games?
Oh.
is there something there as opposed to, no, we have Mitchell Robinson back. But I'm with you. This feels a bit like, hey, you're going to get a little playoff seasoning, Detroit. This is an incredible story. But are you really going to beat the Knicks despite their flaws and the flaws that we would get into as they move a little bit further on? Because that's why, like, the Pacers-Knicks scenarios where you were like, if they end up facing each other,
that was bad for the Knicks.
Yeah, because it kind of felt like
not a good series for them.
There were some similarities where you didn't like your point guard on defense, you didn't like your center on defense, but you liked some of your options around it. But that might be the problem. Like,
it's not a fun series for Towns. That would not be my ideal Towns matchup. The Pacers wouldn't enjoy that one. The thing with the Pistons that I think is just really cool is the Bickerstaff leaves the Cavs, right?
Yeah.
The Cavs win in the, what do they end up with? 64 wins, and Atkinson is a coach of the year candidate. And Bickerstaff goes to this other team and turns them around. And so you look at the Atkinson piece and you go, well, clearly he's a big improvement over Bickerstaff. And yet Bickerstaff was a huge improvement over the worst coach of the 21st century, Monty Williams. And somehow it just all worked out for everybody. So I guess I'm happy for Bickerstaff, because it would have been one of those things where you just look like a schmuck that this team just played way better when you left. But now he got this other thing out of it. But
is Cade the best player in the series?
I think Brunson is. I would say Brunson. Brunson's awesome. Especially like in a playoff series where he's going to have breaks between games. Like, Brunson's incredible. I really, when he made the 65 game limit, I test drove what he would look like in the first All-NBA spot instead of Mitchell, and I couldn't get there. But I think he's been that special this year.
Were you more tempted to go Brunson or Ant for Mitchell's spot?
I test drove Ant as well. And then I did a long drive around the lap with Curry.
You went for a walk outside?
Well, Curry's last week, I mean, that San Antonio loss was an abomination. They lost the two biggest games they played all year were that San Antonio, or losses were that San Antonio loss and the one today. I think if they win those games and they're a three seed or a four seed, I think that's a more interesting conversation. He had it in his hands if he was just awesome down the stretch. I think he could have pushed Mitchell, but I don't think the way they ended. And by the way, that San Antonio loss is the loss of the year. That fucked up the playoff schedule nine ways. It fucked up everything. Because Harrison Barnes had a revenge game. And the Spurs, with Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes, celebrated like they got to the Final Four. Like, this is a team that's tanking.
I'm sure Warriors fans are like, couldn't make a couple of those in Game 7.
Right. We had to take you out.
9 years ago.
For Festus Ezeli. Playing stuff quickly. who do you think the Cavs would want to face the most out of Magic, Bulls, Heat?
You're leaving the Hawks out?
Oh, and the Hawks. All right, all four of those. Magic, Hawks, Bulls, Heat. The Hawks are pretty grim if you look at their actual teams they've beaten the last 2 months versus the teams they've lost to. Where it's one of those, we're not tanking and a lot of these other teams we're playing are, and we're getting some wins out of it. But the numbers are pretty grim if you actually look at it. I think that's why the Magic are 5-point favorites in the play-in game.
Yeah, the records, I mean, they're both around 500, but Atlanta's defense is so bad that I think it's just, you know, if you're going up against somebody in the playoffs, you'd probably rather have a terrible, terrible defense, just knowing that this is going to be easy work. Even in the night where we're not feeling it, we're not making threes. Like, are we actually going to be scared of anything? As opposed to Orlando, who we know their offense at times has been unwatchable, and it's improved from unwatchable the last few weeks. But it's a 1-2 punch of Paolo and Franz. So, you know, and I think you could look at some of the Miami stuff, but it's just that Miami's at best a very average basketball team. So,
can I do a cousin of you guys?
Yeah.
People forget.
Yeah.
Vaguely insulting when you start the people forget. But in this case, I do think people have forgotten how big the Jalen Johnson injury was. That might be the number one people forget. Like, Jalen Johnson was playing awesome. And if Atlanta had Jalen Johnson with the team that they have, the rest of the guys that I kind of like some of the guys in that team. And I don't even think the Hunter trade, the guys they got back from those guys are playing for them. If they had Jalen Johnson, this would be a lot more interesting as a kind of a frisky eight seed that might be able to steal a game or two. But
when he was still really playing, good. I was tracking touches, just how many touches do you have? So it's pretty clear Jokic has more. He touches the basketball more times in a basketball game than any other player in the league. And Trey's usually right around there, if not other years where he's led the league in total touches over the course of the entire season. During the time Jalen Johnson was playing, he'd be like third or fourth in the NBA. That's how important he was and how much they trusted him. And think about that too, playing off of Trey and having another guy that actually has that many touches. And he looks like he's on the way to, you know, I don't know if he's like a superstar, changes the face of the franchise kind of thing, but he was really special and a lot of fun to watch. So you're right. Like, look, every summer we'll do it again next year. We do the over-unders. And we're like, you know what roster I do kind of like, despite some of the obvious concerns?
Yeah.
It's Atlanta. So pencil me in for like another year of doing that.
I think that was the second biggest injury of the year in terms of the actual playoff stuff, other than Kyrie, which if the Mavs had Kyrie, that's the team that they have. It's at least a team that, you know, you'd have to throw a couple haymakers against. Now it's like without him, it's ridiculous.
No, I think you're right about that.
But I have Jalen Johnson second, though. I even ahead of Wemby. Like, if San Antonio had Wemby, I don't feel like, oh, watch out. San Antonio could maybe steal a couple games from anyone in round one. But Atlanta, I don't know.
But don't you think, look, San Antonio, they could be five games better, right? They were five out of the 10 spot.
Yeah. I just felt like their supporting cast felt like it was a year away. Next year.
Yeah. That's
next year would be pretty interesting. You know what else would have been interesting? If the Mavs had gotten Austin Reeves in the Luka trade, which they should have just asked for.
Or if San Antonio would have offered a contract.
Well, that could have happened too. I was talking about somebody about that this week. Like, how does Dallas not say, look, Reeves has to be in the deal or it's not happening? I just don't think Palinka, we'll talk about this for the rest of our lives. I just don't think Palinka's like, too much. I'm walking away. Now you push me too far. There's no way he doesn't say, fine, take Reeves.
It's my favorite part. Like, forget about what it would be like lining up a putt to win the Masters on 18. Like, how would you handle that?
Yeah.
I like to take ourselves through the exercise of, if this person calls you and offers you this, will you have the balls to say no to something that you desperately want? Knowing that, okay, this fixes... For all of like this Lakers window extending and, you know, running in Denver in the last couple of playoffs, like, hey, if something bounces our way, like, this has actually been, I think, a more successful run for the Lakers than they actually get credit for. But because LeBron's on the team, they're held to maybe the standard. They're supposed to be a title contender. So then they're brought up as a title contender on TV shows. And you and I have talked about it. We're like, going into this year, they're like, look, they're probably not going to have the same health luck that they had with AD and LeBron the year prior.
Yeah.
If they're healthy in the playoffs to get the right matchup, maybe. But this is a team that won a title, what, half a decade ago. And here we go. Like, I don't know. I can't figure them out. Like, I don't know if I should be picking them, because I can't imagine that they would beat OKC in a seven-game series if they're lucky enough to get that far. Okay. But looking at, and that would be in the Western Conference Finals, looking at that moment where you're Nico and you go, well, I have to ask for more, because Pelinka can't actually say, like, Pelinka would never bring it up. He'd be like, you know, I was this close to getting Luka, but I wouldn't include Reeves. And you would just go, Luka solves the next 5 years of your what if post LeBron.
Next seven. 15 years.
Let's call it seven.
Let's call it 12.
To get worked that bad. It's been 2 months since the trade, and I did a monologue on it the other day, and I still felt like it was somewhat relevant. Granted, because it was his first time coming back and he has 31 in the first half, but like it's so bad that I don't think they can fire him, because they all acted like they were all on the same page and they're going to have to like ride it out.
Where was the one guy, whether it was Dumont or anybody else, it was just like, hold on. We're trading Luka. We're not going to get Reeves. It's not Davis. Like, we're just making the Lakers like much better.
Imagine if Nico says, well, then they would have said no. And we're like, oh, no. Well,
okay. Sounds great.
One guy that had the say in it thought the least of the asset in the entire basketball world. The one guy that exists, right? Because there's always like one guy who's like, oh, he's not that good. I think Skip Bayless tried to have a LeBron Rory tweet or something, or it didn't. I don't know. It was basically just a new way to shit on LeBron. And
interesting.
Yeah. I was like, cool, tricep pulled out.
He's in the lab, bro.
Yeah. He was in the lab just baking him. So there's always one person that will find a way to say the thing that like you can't fucking believe somebody believes. And this, the one person happened to be the guy who was running the Dallas Mavericks when it came to Luka.
So I got more intel on that trade. It was a known thing 90 minutes before the trade. It was done 90 minutes before it was actually announced. Maybe even a little more than that.
Okay, but that's not unusual.
But they tried to make it seem like nobody knew until the very last second. I think way more people knew. And I think it got around the league a little bit before it actually got reported. And I think the consensus was, there's no way this is true, because that can't be what Dallas got for Luka. This has to be some sort of, there's no way. This can't be true. And then it was true. Because the instant reaction is, wait, they're trading Luka? Why didn't they shop him? And then the second one is, wait, Reeves isn't in this? That's the whole trade? That was the second thing. And then how they hid it from everybody and didn't shop it, I guess. We'll be talking about it forever. It's one of the seminal moments of the 21st century in the National Basketball Association, this stupid trade they made.
I remember 2025 because you were able to be professional enough to go to YouTube live that night with me and Mahoney and do an hour of content.
In 9 minutes.
Knowing deep down, for personal reasons, how much you hate this fucking transaction.
You know what's been interesting with the Laker fans? And obviously I know a few of them. Even they're like not talking like crazy shit about it, because they can't believe it happened. They're not like, we're the Lakers. They're just like, it's like that, like a check for $1 million made out to nobody just floated into their front door and they grabbed it and just wrote their name and cashed it. Nobody was ever going to find out. It's one of those. It's like a fucking borderline miracle if you're a Laker fan. You just can't believe it. Like, what did he have the other night? He just randomly had, what, like 41, 13?
45.
45, 13, and 9.
Are you talking about the Mavs game?
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm talking about the last game he played. He played one more game, what, on Friday night? And had another one. He's just like, a normal game for him is 38, 9. It just fucking kills me.
Oh, the Houston game?
Yeah.
He had 39. He's 39, and it's even
it's like, a typical game. Look at 39.
It was even worse than that Dallas game too, because then AD's not doing anything. He's like having the bad AD game. Because I always think it's so stupid when the guys are on TV going like, "Hey, AD's not a bad player." We're like, no shit.
Yeah,
all of us have TVs.
Yeah, we all like
know
them.
AD is really good, and he was awesome last year. But like, what are you talking about?
Well, but the other piece of it is, if the Lakers had the version of AD that's basically existed since mid-January, they wouldn't be in the playoffs. They'd be like a 9 or a 10 play-in team, right? Because they wouldn't have had AD this whole time. They would have put this huge burden on LeBron. They, you know, they would have the same lack of rim protection they have now. It's really nuts.
That's also another thing in the Lakers conversation, though, because over that 18-3 stretch where their defense was first or second in the league, it was like going for a month. And because when they added Luka, I think it was fair to also look at the perimeter defense going like, okay, but how is this going to hold up on the perimeter? Are these guys, is Luka going to get hunted? I think Reeves does a good job of being in position. He's one of those guys that's smart, but clearly there's going to be times if you get him deep enough, you can overpower him a little bit. And then night to night, like, look, I expect that we're going to see a more consistent effort, somebody that's willing to not just switch into advantages for him to rest himself with LeBron. Like, I imagine he's going to play with more intensity on that side of the basketball. But the last 15, you know, whatever, you can throw it all away, but they're 21st in defense. So when they were one of the three best defenses in the NBA for over a month after they had made the trade, I couldn't. We could talk about coaching. We're giving the staff all of this credit, and like game in and game out, I think they prep, they adapt better. It's almost like a football team going into a Sunday being like, this is the game plan specific, which can get lost in an NBA regular season. But I'm with, like, that felt, it just, like, there's no way they're this good. They're not going to be a top five defense. Like, hey, it starts with defense with that group. Maybe they outscore Minnesota, but, and it doesn't really matter what the scores were before, but those are actually lower scoring games. But they had played so long ago. Again, it's pre-Luka, so it doesn't really matter.
It's going to be a bitch of a playoff team to play with how they execute offense, with how hard they are to officiate, especially when they're home. It's just going to be really hard.
And again, the whole point of Luka is when it all falls apart and you need a bucket, it's 110-110 and you're under a minute and everybody knows everything you're doing and it's game four and they're going to sell out. Score. And it's just like, I'm just going to score. And it's at its worst, is it the second or third best thing in the entire league of like, hey, I need a bucket. And we have playoff success to prove that that works. As much as Boston ran him into the ground defensively and all that kind of stuff, like, you traded this thing that is the most important thing to actually succeed in the playoffs. Him with the ball deciding what he's going to do.
It might be the best thing. We've known this forever, because if you go back when we did you weren't with us yet, but we did the 2018 NBA draft stuff. And my argument for Luke over Ayton was like, this is the league now. You have to have a guy like this. That's how you win titles. Unless, you know, nobody knew Jokic was going to turn into Jokic, but it's a perimeter game. The threes are becoming more important. Like, you have to have one of these guys if you're going to try to win the title year after year, and the Lakers have one of these guys.
Jokic might get you the best look. Doncic probably get you the best shot.
Well, now that Jokic has mastered this thing he does where he's basically, I don't even know. We need a name for it. When he has the ball 25 feet from the basket and he backs the guy down, does the whirling, does that thing, and then all of a sudden he's 4 feet from the basket. I don't know how he does it, and I don't know what it's called. I don't know how you stop it. The only way teams seem to stop it is they send a small guard and they try to kind of out of nowhere to his blind side and try to strip him, but he doesn't have a blind side because he's doing this all the time. I have a couple quick things. Oh, and then OKC versus Grizzlies, Mavs, Kings. Is there anything that says to you that would even go more than four games? Is there one team that could take a game off the Thunder?
I don't think it's Dallas, man. When they had a lineup out there, it was one center lineup, and I think on the perimeter it was Dinwiddie, Najee, Clay, and then I think PJ may have been playing power forward with a center. And the amount of like resistance that wasn't happening on the perimeter defensively, and even PJ, who you think at least physically can hold up and stuff, he lost LeBron in one of those plays. I'm just watching that going like, all right, even if AD and Kyrie were here, like they have some lineups where they'd have to maybe switch some guys out and just go, we're going to have to hold up defensively here with some better options there. Memphis, I know exactly what it's going to look like at the end of the playoff game. Maybe it'll go in. Maybe it won't.
Dallas gets a win because they don't have to play home again. If they win two play-in games, they're both on the road. And maybe during that second play-in game, maybe you start thinking deep down in the deep recesses of your soul, wouldn't mind the season ending. We'll see what happens. I have a couple other storylines for you, then we'll go. Bub Carrington.
Yeah.
Carrying the Wizards to a win, knocking them out of the one spot. I was torturing house. It was the funniest. So Utah has the number one spot. Now, the top three are Utah, Washington, Charlotte. They have 14%.
Right.
So it doesn't matter from an odd standpoint, but it does matter if you get jumped, what the sequencing is. It just brings you closer to having one of the top three. And the Wiz, I don't know how it would have shook out if I think they were in the head spot ahead of Utah because Utah won a couple of days ago. It comes down to Bub Carrington with 4 seconds left, beating two guys off the dribble and doing a double clutch fling off the backboard that goes in, and then he's mobbed. And it felt a little Joe Milton-y to me. I got to be honest, Priscilla. It's a little Joe Milton PTSD kicked in. It was like, you know what that reminds me of? When the Pats had the number one pick that they would have been able to trade for 3 first-round picks because everybody loves Cam Ward, and instead we're picking fourth in a 3-point draft. That's what I thought.
Yeah, that was a tough one for Pats fans because you're like, well, you know what? That group competed and they can use that in 25. Maybe, remember when we were supposed to lose? We fought really hard. We can build on that. You're like, yep, we can build on it with less resources.
With two less first-round picks, and now we're going to take a left tackle who should go 9th with the 4th pick.
It's question like, for you. Would you rather the Sixers or Spurs win the lottery?
Spurs.
Okay, I know last week we both agreed pretty quickly without any discussion that the Sixers winning the lottery would be the grossest of all the outcomes.
It would be disgusting.
Are the Spurs a little?
No, because the Wemby thing was seems like a legitimate medical thing by all accounts.
Well, yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, yeah. I think Goldsberry's been pretty good on that. So.
Yeah. I feel like they've handled
82 Chris.
Everything correctly. I like that they beat Golden State in that game. The Philly thing would be gross. Did you see? Oh, that was another thing I had on my list. Daryl said him and Nurse are coming back next season. I got to say, I was genuinely surprised. We're taping this right now. It's a little past 6 o'clock Sunday. So who knows? Monday morning, we might wake up and that might not be true. But I was surprised to see that both guys feel like they're coming back.
You cool with that?
Cool with that from what standpoint?
You think it's the right decision?
I need more intel on who decided it was a good idea to let Joel Embiid play in the Olympics and then give him a giant extension. Whoever's decision that was should probably pay some sort of consequence.
It felt like it was turning on Daryl when the news came out. It was like, yeah, and ownership was really hesitant about giving Joel that deal. And you're like, oh, really? Yeah. The guys who have to pay the $200 million were hesitant about doing it? Because that's usually
next topic. I only have two more. Mikal Bridges kept his consecutive game streak alive. I don't know if you saw it today. He checked in for 6 seconds and came out.
Yeah, committed a foul.
So AC Green did this when he broke his nose, came in with a mask for, I think, 3 or 4 games, and checked in and checked out to keep the streak going. I both don't care at all, and I also really, truly hate this. I hate it, but I also don't care.
I really hated it when AC Green did it.
I forget whose one he broke. It was like Randy Smith, maybe? The old Buffalo Brave?
Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
I'm going to get research on that.
I think Randy Smith played like 900 straight games.
I think there was a time
actually played in the games.
Yeah. I think it was, again, I was so much younger then, right? So it was 1996. I remember, I think there was some high fives that he gave the guys as he came out, like he had done something cool, and that just really bothered me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Randy Green, 906.
Randy Green? Were they related?
I'm not Randy Green, Randy Smith.
Okay.
Who beat your guy Johnny Red Kerr?
Oh, that's my guy.
844. I know you're a big fan.
Randy Smith from Buffalo State.
Yeah, he was good.
He was a 14th round moments. Pick. Talk about a sleeper.
I think he was in the All-Star game. He's an All-Star.
Yeah.
Good 78. Shooting guard. Yeah. Good basketball guard.
He was 24th in the MVP voting. He has 76.
He has one of the cards of my favorite card set of all time, the 1976 Big Boy Tops. Randy Smith's in there. Last thing for you. I just want to congratulate the NBA one more time for just fucking up their schedule.
Oh, come on.
I don't understand.
So nice. You've been nice the whole pod.
So you have two games that matter today, right?
Yeah.
Two games that we know are going to matter. Houston, Denver, Golden State Clippers, because Minnesota is obviously going to kill Utah. Why not nudge those games by like 2 hours or 90 minutes? Anything. Your whole goal is to, for people who love basketball, to watch the league that you have, but then maybe also get some casual fans who are like, not sure how much I love basketball, but that game was really awesome and now I want to watch more. Or, hey, maybe my kid can come in and we'll watch the second half of this Clippers Warriors game that really means something. And instead you're just intentionally going at some Masters that gets 10 to 14 million people and you get blown away in the last day of your season by this Rory thing. And it's just like a self-inflicted wound. I don't get it. Either move the game 2 hours or move the schedule 2 weeks or they're the most stubborn fucking league and I don't know why I love it sometimes. Really frustrates me.
Okay, well, I think what they're doing with Saturday, trying to give everybody like equal footing, right? Give everybody the day off. Make sure it's not back-to-back. Seating stuff is really going to matter. Some years it's going to go great. It. So this year was thin.
We had UFC and boxing last night. We were fine. And baseball. Right. I'm back on baseball, but meaning to talk to you about it.
The TV game is so competitive right now. I mean, unless you just say, hey, let's make sure we're never going to be going up against the Masters for games 82. Okay, does that mean you move it all to Monday? But you keep moving this stuff around, the play-in part of it.
Couldn't you nudge it 2 hours? Like, what would Goodell do? Here's a good example. What would Goodell do in this situation? If he had the crown jewel of the Sunday slate, turns out it's Clippers Warriors. Goodell would be like, fuck it. We're putting that on NBC 8 o'clock on Sunday night and we're blowing this out, making this an event, which is what they should have done with Clippers Warriors. Instead, they buried it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon PT.
Okay, but isn't the fear, if you do that, right, flex it out, NBA version of it, that game could be totally pointless too at some point? Or do you make that decision ahead of time?
Yeah, no, you make it like 24 hours ahead of time.
Okay.
We knew yesterday what the most important game was. You and I were texting about it. It was like Clips Warriors. This game matters. Not sure if Rockets Nuggets are going to matter. We know Clips Warriors is going to matter. So anyway, it's a league that is in great shape and hit the jackpot with this Luka trade. It's the single best thing that happened to the league this decade and is in the running maybe since the decision and LeBron going to Miami and all the stuff they got from that as the biggest thing that happened in the league. They have this 25-year-old incredible offensive player now on the single most important franchise in the league, at least from a popularity, you know, maybe second in a history standpoint. But they hit the jackpot with this. So it's in a good spot. And now you have Steph Curry playing to try to not avoid the play-in against a Clippers team that's really fun to watch. Like, I don't know. I would have blown it out. I am watching baseball again, Russell.
Yeah, you sent me a text about it today.
Crochet was throwing a no-hitter that I didn't want to tell you he was throwing a no-hitter because I was trying to obey the no-hitter rules. But yeah, Red Sox team. A lot of bats. Bats have been a little quiet so far. But likable team. I'm back. 5-year hiatus.
They have the second most runs in the American League.
Bats have been quiet. Expected more. They had a 19-run game. That's why the runs are where they were.
A lot of parity at the top of the American League. Like Jeff Passan told us. Flat.
All right. So you're doing your pod on Tuesday and Thursday this week.
Tuesday, Thursday.
For some reason, the playing games are Friday. I don't really understand why we didn't stagger those either and why we gave away Thursday night completely, but that's what they decided to do. And then we'll be back Sunday with a whole raucous.
Yeah.
The most fun weekend of the year. The 8 games, overreactions left and right. I'm just telling you now, I'm going to be overreacting all over the place. When are you doing your awards? Tuesday or Thursday?
I could save it to unveil the ballot with you next Sunday. Why don't we do that? Could I think it's more fun. I think it's more fun.
When is our stuff due?
I think it's the 18th.
Huh. All right. I'm happy to do that with you.
Yeah.
Well, we already had some revelations. I don't think people realize that Jokic has maybe a little bit better chance to win MVP than people realize.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by what I've said, but yeah, you're right. Like, that'd be something you'd be good at, because I feel like there's times I'll text Rudy about a topic for our Tuesday, Thursday, and then I go, you know, this would be better with Bill. Like, available belts. Available belts.
Podcast guest availability?
No. I'm talking NBA, maybe belt availability would be the better way to title it, but you have to come up with something better. No, meaning like, I like when you do which player has had the belt, right? The best player in the world.
Yeah.
When did he have it? Who got it next? How long did this player have it? How short was this guy's belt run? Okay. So if you went through the entire league right now and say, all right, Jokic has the belt, how many other players, like how long is the list of, like, it doesn't seem crazy where you're going like, okay, that guy could at some point be the best player in the world. That list is not over 10 players, I don't think. However, I'd also say that we have three recent belt holders that no one could have ever seen, even if you were being incredibly generous, between Giannis, Jokic especially, and even Kawhi. It's like, at one point, that guy's going to be the best player in the world, and it's three in a pretty short amount of time. So
we both worked those two drafts when Giannis and Jokic got picked. And yeah. If Jokic, I think, had the lowest, didn't he have the lowest jump in the history of the combine or something? Like a 17-inch vertical leap?
I looked at my Jokic scouting report.
We were in
a
commercial when he got drafted.
Right. I looked it up because I always like to go back and like be like, I wonder what I thought of this guy, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's fun. A lot of times it's horrifying. But it was like, man, this guy's like a lot of fun. And then at the end, it was like, but come on, dude. Like, give me a break.
Right. Yeah, it's like you think he's like Omar. What was that guy's name? Omar Samhan? That center that came in and was lighting up people in March Madness?
Well, the first time, and I would only be able to watch him on Synergy, so I would just go back because he was on the list and because I was doing my own stuff. I didn't want to just read everybody else's stuff, and then I would do the draft on whatever. I don't even know if we even talked about the second rounders when they're even picked, because we'd interview so many people on the live broadcast for radio. Like, radio back then when we did the draft, it was like interview. I mean,
you're listing the last five picks after the interview. It's like Nick Johnson got taken.
Right. Like, we're able to get
Nikola Jokic from Serbia.
So when you first watch Jokic, you're like, what is this? This is hilarious. Like, I can't believe he did this. I can't believe he did that. But then, you know, again, athletically, you're just like, well, this was
like, well, remember once upon a time there was a Jokic versus Nurkic, which guy should they keep, was an actual storyline. That was probably 2017 range. They have these two centers, which one should stay?
It feels like they knew.
Yeah, it seems like they knew. Yeah, no question.
But I mean, even Giannis was physically so ridiculous, but what I saw him, it was just, and I know I've talked about this before, but he was just beating up on these dudes in this lower level stuff where you didn't really even know like what to make
it. Looked
of what
like
you
a
were
rec
watching
game.
Yeah.
Also, he was 6'9".
Yeah.
And grew 3 inches after they picked him, which was a miracle
helps
for them. Not as much of a miracle as getting Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis and Max Christie and one first round pick, but a miracle nonetheless. All right, Russillo, I'll see you in a week. Enjoy the playing games and everything else, and good pod.
Enjoy your votes.
That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, new rewatchables coming on Monday. I'm also going to be popping on Zach Lowe's podcast later on Monday, so stay tuned for that. Thanks to Jonathan and Ronick and Jesse and Saruti for producing this one. And I will be back on this podcast on Tuesday. Stay tuned. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. For Kansas, and affiliation with Kansas Star Casino, or 18 plus and present in D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, or visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelpline.ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.